All right, good morning and welcome to the Friday, April 11th, 2025 meeting of the California Coastal Commission. I'd like to ask Ms. Miller to please call the roll.
Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Eckerly. Commissioner Escalante.
Here.
Commissioner Harmon.
Here.
Commissioner Hart.
Oh, here, sorry.
Commissioner Loewenberg. Commissioner Nadoff.
Here.
Commissioner Turnbull Sanders.
Here.
Commissioner Williams.
Here.
Chair Cummings.
Here.
You have a quorum.
I'd like to ask if the staff could read off the virtual meeting procedures.
Good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at calspan.org. If you have access to the internet and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend you use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person through the Zoom platform or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission's webpage. Paper forms and a scannable QR code for paperless submittals are available on the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission's agenda's webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comments may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during general public comments comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on each day of the meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comments are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on an item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have access to the internet, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through the meeting organizer. When it is your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone or provide instructions on how to unmute the phone. Chair Cummings, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to ask if there's any changes to the agenda.
Sorry about that. Good morning, Chair Cummings and Commissioners. We have 4 changes to today's agenda to report. All 4 are also on the agenda changes memo posted to our online agenda. First, item 9A has been moved to consent for a consistency determination by the Federal Aviation Administration and NASA for contracted landings of the crew and cargo capsule in the Pacific Ocean. Next, item 11A has been moved to consent for the CDP application by Point Lobos Holdings for single-family development improvements in Stinson Beach. Next, item 13A has been moved to consent for an LCP amendment by the City of Pacific Grove for coastal hazard refinements. And finally, item 13C has been moved to consent for Santa Cruz County LCP amendment to update its affordable housing overlay. This concludes the changes to today's agenda, and that brings us to item 4, general public comment. With that, I'll turn the mic back over to you, Chair.
All right. General public comment, this is an opportunity for members of the public to address the commission on items that are not on the agenda. I'll turn it to staff to call up the names of individuals who are here in person first, followed by individuals who are online.
For members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it is your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes during general public comments. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will be bringing you in as a panelist. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload. This may take a moment. To speed up this process, we will bring several people in at the same time. in at the same time. But please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you'll be moved back to attendee mode. For the members of the public present in the room, I will call your name in order that they appear on our sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and announce yourself with your name when you approach to speak. Several helpful tips. There is a raise hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see the button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. Please remember to state your name for the record. First up, we have Nicholas Bua, Craig Woodman, Daryl Gale, Guru Bhatt, and Brett Ballant. Nicholas, you can unmute yourself. You're on Zoom.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you so much for this opportunity. My project that has been funded by a grant is to take a bunch of students to the Catalina Island Marine Institute, and they're coming back and presenting to the remaining students here at school. We just got back from it this weekend, so I don't have anything fully prepared, but I did have a lot of really positive feedback, both from the parents and the students. One parent in particular, it shifted her son's career focus, and he came back so excited about protecting marine and coastal ecosystems, just because he was able to experience it. And so I'm really grateful for you guys for this opportunity for our students. I work at a school with students who mostly live below the poverty line, and they don't get this opportunity. And so I'm grateful to you guys for giving them that opportunity.
Thank you. Next is Craig Woodman, followed by Daryl Gale, followed by Guru Bhatt, followed by Brett Ballant. If you're here, go ahead and come step up to the podium. All right, moving on. Steve Ray, Rachel Wilson, Jim Holt, if you can, go ahead and step up to the podium. It doesn't matter what order. Let's just.
On now? Okay, yes. Okay, I'm Daryl Gale, also known as Connie Canister. Hi, Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's me again, Connie Canister. Remember we talked a few months ago? Well, I have another question for you. I was driving home on the 5 from work. I'm a science teacher at San Onofre Middle School. We can see the plant from the playground. So I saw a commotion and I stopped the car. The beach was covered with these cute little octopuses all over the beach. They were just adorable. So I picked them up. Two of them jumped on me. I picked them up and I put them in my bathtub. Next day, I brought them to school. What? I shouldn't have picked them up and taken them home or to the school? You want to check them out? Okay, but they're my pets. When you come here, give my class a lecture on how it's safe to leave nuclear waste on the beach. They need to hear it from a responsible government agency. Bye.
My name is Rachel Wilson. Good morning, Mr. Chair, commissioners, and staff. I am here with an update on the proposed Vistra Morro Bay battery energy storage system. On April 4th, Vistra formally withdrew their application with the City of Morro Bay to build their proposed BESS right across the street from an estuary and sea otters in the heart of our tourist community. Initially, there was a celebration in the community, a community that passed an initiative last fall that would have required a vote of the people before a permit could be issued, and the city council had enacted a 2-year moratorium on any BESS to give the community time to develop proper siting guidelines. This was a short-lived celebration. Vistra let us know that they are considering opting in to use AB 205, which takes the decision away from Morro Bay and gives it to the California Energy Commission. Fortunately, you get the final say, and your awesome staff last August wrote a response to the draft EIR with definite concerns about the project, including the fact that it is not coastal dependent. It does not need to be there. Vistra wrote that the old power plant is an underutilized asset on their books. I agree. It is 127 acres in the heart of our tourist community. This property should be an asset for all to enjoy. Vistra is writing off $400 million due to the fire at Moss Landing. We cannot afford to write off and walk away from our California coastline. More to come. Thank you.
Jim Holtz. A decade after accepting $250,000 in commission grants, Hermosa Beach still hasn't produced an LCP draft. In 2016, during hearings to justify their near-blanket STVR ban applied indiscriminately to all residential zones, the city attorney claimed a ban had always been existed based on a Frankenstein patchwork of unrelated ordinances. Hermosa asserted that it was just clarifying the law, but in reality created a new land use needing commission approval. Then commission chair Steve Kinsey personally and directly warned Hermosa that doing so without commission approval would violate the Coastal Act. A council member dismissed that letter publicly at a meeting, saying, "That's just staff members' opinion." Hermosa's defiance of the commission endures. At a city council meeting a couple weeks ago, attorney Frank Angel, who sued the city on the behalf of a homeowner, fined $2,500 just for listing his bedroom in his own home near the Strand, had his timely written comment excluded and his Zoom call conveniently failed with no effort to reconnect him. Hermosa claims to be STVR friendly, but only permits them in the commercial zone where homes are scarce. Just 20 are permitted, though it's unclear on how many of those are actually in the coastal zone. And growth is unlikely because most are owner-occupied. This is what Hermosa calls a balanced plan. I urge the commission to place Hermosa Beach compliance and its LCP on a future agenda for full public discussion. 10 years of non-compliance and defiance deserves formal review. Thank you.
Okay, Craig Woodman, Guru Bot, Brett Ballant, Steve Ray.
Did you hear your name called? Because if so, you can approach the mic.
Guru Bot.
Please.
Go for it.
Hi, everyone. Thank you again for this opportunity to talk in front of the commission. And thank you for doing your jobs. I think we can do a lot better. When I came here to this state in 2002, I thought this is the state where I want to be for the rest of my life. The recent fires, the LA fires that happened, Palisades and everything that burned down, has really created a bit of friction in how a state like California being, is it the fifth largest GDP in the world? And we cannot manage, prevent wildfires. It's very disappointing that we are in this situation right now. And I just want to express a public comment regarding this. It's not just me. I showed up here, but there's a lot of residents in LA that are still going through this. Now, my background has enabled me to set up a fund to help these people that did not have proper insurance. We're going to rebuild LA, and we need help from all the commission members out here to support those families that have lost their livelihoods, their houses, their homes, their jobs, their businesses. We need a stronger California. We need a stronger country. This cannot happen again, at least in my watch. Thank you.
Next is Steve Ray, followed by Lorna Moffitt. Okay, Steve Ray, Renee Garcia, Brett
Ballard.
They're here now. Then followed by Lorna Moffitt, followed by Brian Rosen, followed by Melody Mayer.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair, commissioners, staff, and members of the public. I apologize again for my voice, but 3 weeks ago when I had my throat surgery, the doctor said it would be 4 months before I could talk. I guess he didn't know he couldn't keep me shut up. So here I am 3 weeks later. Anyway, hopefully it'll continue to improve over future sessions. So I look forward to talking to you more in the future. But I had to come in today and speak to you because of all of our good friend, Billy Clayton. I wasn't able to be here Wednesday when you were celebrating his term here with you, but I can tell you, I was here BBC. I spent 24 years coming to commission hearings before Billy Clayton showed up. And meetings were quite an adventure in those days. But Billy and his crew have come in and really, really made this commission run so smoothly. And for that, we're all grateful. And Billy, I want you to know that all of the female associates that work with me for all these years have all asked me to give you a big hug and a big kiss for them. We'll maybe do that hug part. You can call them about the kisses. But Billy has been such a steadfast part of this organization and has made it being a pleasure being here and what he's done to keep this going. The one good thing about him leaving is he's leaving a good crew with you. Anthony and Ray back there and then other new guy that's going to be coming in are going to be taking care of all of us real closely. But Billy, it's been a pleasure, but our brother, and look forward to seeing you out there on the road. Thank you.
Renee Garcia, followed by Brett Ballant. Yes.
Hello. Hi, my name is Renee Garcia.
Go ahead, Renee, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm going to start now. Hi, my name is Renee Garcia, and I represent Arvin Power Company. And we are committed to providing affordable, renewable energy solutions that empower rural and underserved communities. We strive to offer sustainable alternatives to conventional power, ensuring every home can access clean, reliable energy. And we established APC directly to address the state's needs by supplying renewable energy to underprivileged California communities. APC will provide a cost-effective alternative to PG&E. The city of Arvin, California recognizes the importance of offering its residents a more affordable electricity choice beyond their current provider. Arvin is a rural community predominantly comprised of low-income Hispanic farm workers and truck drivers who are APC's target customers. APC services bring peace of mind to these dedicated residents, easing the burden of navigating complexities of solar leases or state-sponsored no-cost rooftop initiatives. APC is set to enhance our solar capabilities, opening doors for expanding surplus energies through power purchase agreements to neighboring California communities and industries in need of affordable green renewable power. Now, me and my family own 445 acres in New Arvin, California, where the initial 100-acre APC solar farm will be developed to fulfill the energy needs of Arvin residents. The remaining 345 acres will be available for the future growth. The Garcias have lived in Arvin their entire lives, and we are among the founding members of the Arvin Power Project. Brett.
Thank you, Renee. Excuse me, I got a cold as well, but the show must go on, right? My name is Brett Balint McNee. We represent an ecosystem of companies. Arvin Power Company is the solar microgrid source for several things, not only powering the town. I stated this last month in Sacramento with our lieutenant governor. She's not here today, is she? All right. So that project was on plate for 5 years. It's been held up 4 years because of superfluous regulations of the CUC and Casio, as well as the utility does not want to lose 5,000 customers. But at the same time, they don't serve them very well, given blackouts. It's called life on the edge of the grid. They have blackouts in the summer, 100-degree weather, and all that sort of stuff, as well as the school system there. But Onward and Upward and Drone Energy System Corp. are married at the hip. My business partner is Michael DeCosola. He's out of Chicago. We're the largest patent holders in 40 countries, seven territories. We just got patents granted also in Germany for everything AAM and UAM, urban air mobility, advanced air mobility. In fact, many of those are our trademarks. We just got recently awarded as well on a federal level. Onward and Upward is an SPC, a special purpose entity, intent on being a B corporation, if you're not familiar with what a B corporation is. So if Joby Aviation, you heard of that aircraft, Joby is electric aircraft, and Archer Aviation, if those are our flying cars, we are the highway. Let me repeat, we are the highway. So every on-ramps, off-ramps, bus stops are vertiports that you land on. If you don't pay for our license, you can't land, you can't take off. That's how it is in Germany. So everything in other countries that's granted. Our U.S. patent portfolio is about 8-9 months overdue at the patent office, and that baby's got to be birthed sometime soon. If not, we're going to get that. We're going to sue the patent office or have it doged, one of the two, because it's a dereliction of duty at this point. And I'm almost out of time. We'll wrap this up. Last part of that is my background is a Marine Corps veteran. I didn't advance any slides here. There's about 10 slides we didn't get to go through.
Oh, no, you only have 2 minutes each, so.
So there's four slides. We allocated four times. We have a business partner. We already
picked
the group.
Sir, your time's
well,
up.
Well, please go through the slides. Thank you very much. That's all there. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Up next is Lorna Moffitt, followed by Brian Rosen, followed by Melody Mayer. Lorna, I want to go ahead and unmute yourself, please.
Excuse me, sir. Please don't harass our staff. Thank you.
Hello. This is Lorna Moffitt. Is it my turn?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead and speak.
Good morning, commissioners. Lorna Moffitt here. Fuel reduction can seem like a benevolent prospect, but what worries me is the cutting down of thousands of trees and thinning out forests because the science does not support that notion. Recently, a judge ruled to stop the U.S. Forest Service from thinning out a national forest site because after careful consideration and delving into the science, found that thinning actually made forests more vulnerable to fires. And the wind is a huge factor in this, and thinning allows wind. Trees, big ones, do not burn like little trees do. One of the big reasons we have forest fires is because the timber industry has cut down all the old growth, and only 10% of that old growth remains in our country's forest. So I ask you to allow eucalyptus trees and all other big trees to stay as fire breaks and wind breaks that they were originally intended for. And Angel Island is a good example of how eucalyptus trees actually helped to stop an unstoppable fire, because when the fire reached the 6 acres of eucalyptus trees, the dampness from the fog drift and their transpiration saved the day and the buildings behind. But this lesson is being ignored time and time again, as the invasive species rhetoric insists eucalyptus trees burn harder and faster than other trees. It's simply not true, and anyone who doubts that should read what happened at Angel Island. Also, people are building with wooden fences, and if you look everywhere, everyone has a wooden fence, and that represents a forest somewhere. And the U.S. is the biggest importer of illegal logging in the Amazon, according to the internet. So we need... Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Brian Rosen, followed by Melody Mayer, followed by Cindy Abbott, followed by Samuel Castillas. Brian, you can unmute yourself, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, thank you.
Excellent. I wanted to mention a quote of Mahatma Gandhi's. He said, "The life of a lamb is no less valuable than the life of a human being." And there are a lot of animals that live in the coastal zone. And I recall there was something about allowing hunting in the animal zone, and not much respect was given to the animals. And I think they should have their side too. And I think it would be nice if all of you could give some energy to them, their side. And I'm reading from a book by Ralph Waldo Trine. It says, "Every form that is a manifestation of life is dear and of consequence to the divine mind and heart. To love all, reverence the life in all, protect and care for all is the motto of the wise. The best friend of God is he who is not only a friend of man, but a friend of all nature and of every living thing." So remember, these animals have feelings, and they're being hunted often brutally. And so just give them a little bit of respect when you bring up the subject. You know, what about eucalyptus trees? I think they're very, very magnificent, wonderful trees. I would love to hug 100 of them. And okay, so they're not native. I'm not native, I guess, because my relatives came from Europe. Apparently, but they were born here, a lot of eucalyptus. I was born here. The seeds sprouted. They were born here, and they produce a tremendous amount of oxygen, and they're very important. And we don't have to have a hatred towards the eucalyptus trees. We can respect them. They have a place. The regular trees have a place. Let us all live together in harmony and protect the trees, because these trees are really amazing how much oxygen they produce and how beautiful and sacred they are. Thank you very much.
Next is Melody Mayer, followed by Cindy Abbott, followed by Samuel Casillas, followed by Jim Cramer. Lastly, Rye Anderson. Not last, though, but.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. My name is Melody Meyer. I'm an attorney at the Environmental Protection Information Center, or EPIC. I'm here to discuss the Natural Resources Conservation Service and Wildlands Conservancy Rust Creek and Centerville Slough Restoration Project. I'm encouraging the commission to hold off on permitting or its consistency determination for this project until all potential violations on the involved properties are thoroughly looked into and resolved. EPIC witnessed a similar situation of multiple violations at Reservation Ranch, where unpermitted structures like tidal gates and berms disrupted important coastal areas. The difference there was that the full scope of violations was known. In this case, the landowners unfortunately haven't been as cooperative, and they've been reluctant to let Coastal Commission staff visit the properties and have yet to schedule a site visit, which leaves a lot of uncertainty. Even more important for the commission to get a clearer picture of what's going on before moving forward with any permits or consistency determinations. Given these concerns, I encourage the commission to consider using the full range of enforcement tools at its disposal, looking at Public Resources Code 30810 before moving forward. Thank you for your time and your careful consideration.
Thank you. Next is Cindy Abbott, followed by Samuel Casillas, followed by Jim Cramer, followed by Rye Anderson, followed by Zoe Collins. Cindy Abbott, if you can unmute yourself, please. Cindy, if you can accept again, promoting you to panelists. See you and panelists, if you can please unmute.
Good morning, Coastal Commissioners. I'm Cindy Abbott of Pacifica. First, my appreciation to each of you for your unwavering support to preserve the California coast. Yesterday, you stood resolute against blatant violations taking place in Santa Barbara County. Not only the site of an oil spill in 2015, but also the vicinity of the 1969 oil spill that spurred Californians to vote for Proposition 20 and create the Coastal Act. Soon you'll be reviewing Pacifica's update to the 1980 local coastal land use plan. The support of coastal staff has resulted in a strong document that preserves space for coastal habitat, recognizes the need for coastal access, and protects the rights of future generations to also understand the risks and minimizes what is allowable development in a coastal hazard zone. The draft LCLUP, however, also includes special shoreline resiliency areas. SSRAs are really just seawalls in sheep's clothing, with the stated intention to intensify development in already impacted coastal hazard zones. Since SSRAs were introduced to Pacificans, scores have voiced their concern against these legislative carve-outs of the coast that ignore the need to plan for relocation of infrastructure, show disdain for science and study that coastal armoring in one location creates havoc adjacent, and also disregards the economics of a city with extremely limited capacity. Mother Earth is increasingly demonstrating the risk of permanent development close to the ocean. Please continue to stand strong for the coast, have SSRAs removed from the CLUP prior to your approval. Support actual resilience and adaptation through meaningful planning for all of the precious coastline in Pacifica, not the continued failed strategy of concrete and rock littering the beach. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Samuel Casillas. Sam, if you can unmute yourself. Sam, you can unmute yourself. Okay, so we're going to go to the next person. Okay, there he comes. There he
goes. Yeah. Hi, following up on Cindy's comments, I wanted to direct us to a specific site, which is the undeveloped San Pedro Field site. What we want to say about this, it's really a microcosm of violations throughout Pacifica. Next slide, please. The staff does recognize there are substantial issues with the Pacifica LCLUP, but the field itself has no development. It has a long-standing environmental baseline that should be conservation or low-intensity visitor serving. What the city is actually setting itself up for with this change to residential in that area is for a taking. And history has shown our leadership to be willing agents and developers to lean on the fear of taking to allow any and all development in hazard zones. There's also documented ESHA by your own biologists and protected species. And also runoff from the development could not be mitigated, would inundate the ESHA and flood the adjacent existing neighborhood in our homes. On top of that is the documented hazard zone where the city recognizes flooding, tsunami, and hydrology issues, and ignoring the site as a potential SB 379 site. The neighborhood overwhelmingly opposes this change to residential based on the science, directly refuting city council members' cynical calls for neighborhood control and neighborhood scale adaptation. The change to LUD to residential would be a substantial and a violation of CEQA. Next slide, please. You know, I'm just going to have enough time to just say that on this, it's like when you look at CEQA guidelines for section 15.125, the correct baseline condition should be described with the physical environmental conditions as they exist, not from what it was supposedly designated before. I encourage you to look at the rest of the slides in this presentation, and you'll see a lot of the hazards that are present. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next is Jim Kramer, followed by Ryan Anderson, followed by Zoe Collins, followed by Penny Elia. Jim Kramer, are you going to mute?
Yes, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yes, I'm Jim Kramer of Pacifica. I'm also talking about the Pacifica LCLUP, which is coming before you soon. I'm pleased it's coming to you. I've tried to follow the exchanges between CCC staff and our city officials for more than 5 years, most of which showed little progress. Without your constructive suggestions by staff, I do not believe we'd have made it here. Thanks to you and your staff for working with us and standing firm. Much of the current draft has merit, but the SSRAs are a clear exception. I and many others feel they are not in the interests of most residents. Far worse, the SSRA exception weakens the Coastal Act and challenges the Commission's essential authority to protect our coast. It would be dangerous precedent. SSRAs were a late addition. Please understand that SSRAs were never favored by most Pacificans who engaged in the process. Even after attempts by city officials to explain them at public information events and city council meetings, the majority of public comments and letters oppose the whole concept, although interestingly, the objections differed across the polarized public. I understand that city claims that SSRAs have wide public support, but this was not and is not now the case. You will have or will see for yourself the hard evidence. You have or will see for yourself the hard evidence for this if you skim the records of public input available to you. Most is overwhelmingly negative. Further, late in the process, even by the deliberations of the city council were marked by confusion and frustration over whether and why this unprecedented condition might be included. Being sold as neighborhood scale adaptations, SSRAs are instead a carve out to armor coastline to facilitate increased new non-dependent coastal development. Renewal could allow the armor in perpetuity. This is inconsistent with the Coastal Act and not in the public interest. In its deft guidance, the Coastal Commission consolidated all of the SSRA conditions in Chapter 6 on coastal hazards. I urge you to support the hard-won LCLUP for Pacific, but only if modified to remove the SSRAs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Rye Anderson, followed by Zoe Collins, followed by Penny Elia. Rye Anderson, go ahead and unmute.
I have some slides. You could please automatically go through them as I speak.
Okay, give us a second.
Thanks. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Rye. I'm a queer and non-binary surfer. I live in San Francisco, and my main surf spot is Ocean Beach. I grew up in the Bay Area, and for most of my life, I dreamed of surfing, but I was scared. Not of the ocean itself, but of the hyper-competitive macho culture I saw there. It felt overwhelmingly hetero and aggressive. I didn't see anyone who felt soft, femme, or queer, no one who felt like me. Early on, when I was just learning to surf, I paddled out, nervous and unsure, trying to control my board, and I was quickly shouted out of the water by a man. I felt really humiliated and scared. I thought maybe the ocean wasn't a place for someone like me. If you could please just like go through the slides as I'm talking. That all changed when I found queer surf. My first meetup with queer surf was in Bolinas. I remember standing at the edge of the water, unsure again, but this time, instead of being shouted at, I was celebrated just for trying. Kyla, queer surf's co-founder, showed me how to start in the white water. They cheered me on as I stood up on my first wave and rode it all the way into the lagoon. Queer surf connects queer and trans people to the ocean, their bodies, and an inclusive surf community. They support queer and mental and physical health, expand surf culture through belonging, and engage queers in marine science and coastal stewardship. They offer surf lessons, meetups, camps, and more, all with the goal of making the coast accessible and healing. Through queer surf, I've become part of a large and loving ocean community. I've made real friends, people I'm excited to meet with in the water. That sense of connection has changed everything. Now, I surf almost every day, and I volunteer as the surf instructor with Queer Surf to help create a safe and affirming place in the ocean with others. When we talk about coastal access, it's important to note that it's not just about infrastructure, it's about belonging. I urge the Commission to support organizations like Queer Surf that make the coast truly welcoming. Because when people feel safe and included in the water, they come back, they build connection, and that's what inspires long-term care for our coast. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Zoe Collins, followed by Penny Elia, followed by Patricia McPherson, followed by Leslie Honda.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Zoe Collins, go ahead.
Sorry about that. Good morning. My name is Zoe Collins, and I'm on the science and policy team at Heal the Bay. Heal the Bay is a nonprofit environmental organization with 40 years of experience dedicated to making the coastal waters and watersheds of Greater Los Angeles safe, healthy, and clean. At Heal the Bay, our work would not be possible without the backing of this commission. from supporting our aquarium facility through adjacent construction projects to whale tail grant funding that supports our beach cleanup programs. Our longstanding partnership is one that we're truly grateful for. We just wanted to take a quick moment to recognize and commend the efforts of the commission and the struggles your team is facing. One thing is certain, the commission will have its fair share of obstacles in the coming years. Coastal management has really entered a new era, and the commission is sort of under siege on all fronts. The recent litany of legislation on local, state, and federal levels is clearly an attempt to undermine the commission's jurisdiction and authority. But your team's dedication to equitable coastal access rings true in a sea of cacophony, and Gilda Bay is honored to partner with you and your staff. In light of the many controversial topics heard at these meetings and the highly contentious nature of coastal development, we wanted to share our support and gratitude for your dedication to keeping our coastlines resilient and accessible. We believe that California's coastline is not for developers and billionaires, it's for the people. Your work ensures it remains that way, and we'll always have Gilda Bay support. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Penny Aaliyah, followed by Patricia McPherson, followed by Leslie Honda, followed by Carol Archibald. Penny Aaliyah, go ahead and unmute yourself.
I have a PowerPoint, please. Thank you.
Give us 1 second, please.
Could you stop the clock until I get my PowerPoint, please?
We'll do that, too. Oh, please.
Thank you. And thank you, Billy. We'll miss you. Here's my kiss.
Okay, Ms. Penny, you're good to go.
Thank you, ma'am. Good morning, Commissioners Penny Aaliyah. First of all, many thanks for your strong work on Sable yesterday, a refreshing enforcement of law in what has become a lawless land, and all those young people to witness your strong action. Thank you. I'm coming to you today to ask for your same strong action, please. I spoke with you last December about Federal Consistency's plan to move forward a combined consistency determination and CDP for the Centerville Slough project in Humboldt County in February. Good news, it was postponed and is still postponed, but it will come to you soon. Bad news, the landowner has yet to set an actual date for your staff to visit this site. Your staff has been refused access for a long time. Next slide. Here's a quick overview. Decades of Coastal Act violations remain unaddressed and unresolved. A handful of these violations are outlined in the August 2024 staff report, but nothing can be fully investigated without a site visit. Next slide. Violation, an unpermitted dike seawall 1.5 mile long. 1 mile has an expired emergency CDP, which constitutes a violation. Next slide. The other 0.5 mile has never been permitted. Next slide. Violation, an unpermitted dam. Next slide. Violation, multiple unpermitted drainage ditches that serve to drain wetlands. Next slide. Many questions about this project remain unanswered, and one of the biggest questions focuses on tribal consultation. Another big question, why is this project that is so similar to the Commission Enforcement's Reservation Ranch case being handled in a completely different manner? Please work with your staff and don't allow this project to move forward with a permit. This project needs to be handled like Reservation Ranch with a strong enforcement action. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Patricia McPherson, followed by Leslie Honda, followed by Carol Archibald, followed by Robin Rudisill. Patricia?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. First off, thank you, Steve Ray, for bringing up Billy with AGP. If you are truly leaving, I want to say thank you so much for 20 plus years of all your service. And I will so, so miss you, as I believe we all will. And keep up the music. The other thing is, I am Patricia McPherson, Grassroots Coalition. I received several bounce backs from emails sent to the commissioners. And I would just like to remind all of the commissioners, as we have new ones, that you may not be aware that the Coastal Commission email addresses came to you via Grassroots Coalition litigation with the Coastal Commission, which our settlement agreement included the commission email addresses. Previous to the settlement agreement, the commissioners only had personal email addresses to which the appearance might appear to be ex-party, and we were very uncomfortable with that. The commission emails alongside a copy to staff is not ex-party. This is our only avenue of communication outside of ex-party, which we can provide to commissioners with ample time prior to the commission's online communications file being made available to the commissioners, because the communication file provided by the commission is provided only a scant few days ahead of a meeting, which is likely not enough time to really consider the input from the public. Please, we need you to be the guardians and guardrails of informed decision-making. So please open up these emails, do not have them bounce back. And it's a gift for us to be able to provide this to you in a timely fashion for you to not have to rush to go through the information that we have worked to provide to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Leslie Honda, followed by Carol Archibald, followed by Robin Rudisill. Leslie Honda, can you unmute yourself?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I also have slides, or one slide.
Okay, 1 second, please.
Thank you. All right. Honorable members of the commission and the public, my name is Leslie Honda, the lead ornithologist from the San Diego Bird Alliance. First, I want to thank the commission and reiterate our appreciation of past actions prioritizing bird and wildlife conservation by protecting Boomer Beach, Point La Jolla, and the Cove, and the immediate response last summer protecting the breeding terns in Mission Bay. Groups that work hard to protect the wildlife and habitat in San Diego were very disappointed to receive notification from the Regional Water Quality Control Board that the City of San Diego will resume spraying chemicals on the La Jolla Bluffs in the sensitive Mount Lajeil State Marine Reserve after 2 years of not spraying. The City of San Diego should not be spraying any chemicals in the sensitive ecological area due to heavy use by breeding seabirds, marine mammals, and the marine biodiversity that includes several endangered species. In absence of the Water Board oversight, we strongly urge the Commission to step in to protect this area. We are concerned about the impacts on breeding birds of conservation concerned Brant's Cormorant and Western Gull, 2024 U.S. Fish and Wildlife Conservation Priorities. Per the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and CDFG Code 3503, chemicals should not be sprayed anywhere near young flightless birds or porous eggshells or in areas where adult breeding birds and marine mammals congregate. Chicks and eggs are especially vulnerable to chemical exposure by transference from the feet and feathers of adults, and young birds are unable to rinse the chemicals off in the water for 8 weeks when flightless. Ingestion of chemicals when birds preen feathers and in marine mammals from the mother's fur when pups nurse is also a concern, as the young have lower thresholds compared to body weight of humans. Ocean conditions are unpredictable from climate change, with 2024 another record-breaking year of warm marine temperatures, with concerns for rampant wildlife illnesses, including domoic acid poisoning and avian flu. Why take this risk exposing wildlife to chemicals when they already face numerous challenges for species survival? Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next is Carol Archibald, followed by Robin Rudisill, followed by Diana Sandoval. Carol Archibald, please unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead and speak, please.
Okay. I'm Carol Archibald. The Sierra Club Steel Society is against the City of San Diego's plans to resume spraying the bluffs north of La Jolla Cove in an attempt to address the odor, and concerned that spraying may impact sensitive wildlife and habitat for rare birds and sea lions, including the Mount Lajeil State Marine Reserve, located directly below the area of spraying, in which birds, sea lions, rain, wind, and tides will track the sprayed chemicals into the reserve. The 2020 safety data sheet on the cleansing product, BioCAC, shows safety procedures for humans to take precautions against chemical exposure to eyes, skin, inhalation, and ingestion. Hazardous decomposition products of BioCAB are oxides of carbon monoxide, and CO2, which can contribute to climate change. Previous data safety data sheets also warned keep out of waterways and storm sewers and toxic to an aquatic environment. Surfactant is added to the spray product to create the foaming action that increases the dwelling time of the liquid and reduces running. If contamination with surfactant causes the surface tension of seawater to drop from below normal levels, water will penetrate a bird's plumage and will become waterlogged. When water penetrates the feather lattice structure. The city has no scientific studies on the effects of spraying BioCAC near sea lions and rare birds. California Coastal Commission labels environmentally sensitive habitat areas, or ESHA, as any area in which plants or animal life or their habitats are either rare or especially valuable because of their special nature or role in an ecosystem, and which could be easily disturbed or degraded by human activities and developments. The ESHA should be protected against any significant disruption of habitat values, and only uses dependent on these resources shall be allowed within these areas. I thank you for your attention and help.
Thank you. Next is Robin Rudisil, followed by Diana Sandoval, followed by Brad Snook. And then we have two people we don't see in Zoom, but we'll double check with them, Alex Bennett and Charles Thomas. Robin Rudisil, go ahead and unmute yourself, please.
Morning, Robin Rudisil from Venice. I've heard coastal commissioners say over and over that the Coastal Commission does not want to fill up the coastal zone with large market rate luxury units adding no affordable housing. And yet yesterday you approved exactly that. The city of LA did not put the coastal zone in the housing element for increased density for good reason. Developments catering to high-income tenants are not a solution to the region's housing challenges if they are 9 to 10 times bigger than everything else in a unique coastal neighborhood. Where Venice is also unique is that it has hundreds of residential lots adjacent to commercial zones that can be consolidated, and you just increased all those property values. This will encourage owners to either sell or to demo and build significantly bigger, high-density projects with even more market rate units, which will in turn put many multiples of lower-income residents at risk of displacement. You're strongly incentivizing even more gentrification when you make a decision that will result in massive de facto upzoning. So why don't you just use the tools at your disposal that actually require you to request appropriate changes on de novo? You said yesterday that the 250 6th Avenue project is a project that wouldn't have been approved in the past. Yes, times are changing, but the certified land use plan and the Coastal Act haven't changed. I can see you approving such a project if it had affordable housing. You could have declared substantial issue and taken it into de novo and asked them to add a fifth affordable unit, which the LUP allows in that land use designation. Why wouldn't you do that? Are you more concerned about the statistics of how many substantial issue determinations you make in case certain people in the legislature are tracking your decisions? The changes being proposed will affect the lives of real people who have been in the community for decades. We need to balance the need for growth with the preservation of our community's physical and social character and protect our lower income residents from displacement. But lastly, I would be remiss if I did not say your kindness and empathy and your final remarks to the residents who are fighting for their neighborhood was very special and truly appreciated.
Thank you. Next is Diana Sandoval, followed by Brad Snook, followed by Alex Bennett, Charles Thomas, and possibly Lydia Ponce. Diana, if you can unmute yourself.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Diana Sandoval, and this is my fourth time I've come before you to raise concerns about Santa Barbara County violating the Coastal Act and allowing an ultra-wealthy property owner at 3215 Foothill Road, Carpinteria, to block a public equestrian hiking trail. This public trail, which should be accessible to the public, has gone unrecorded and blocked for years. Despite this clear violation, Santa Barbara County has known about this for about 11 months, and the commission's Ventura office has known for about 10 months, but the issue remains. The public trail is unrecorded and blocked. The fact is, a 15-foot wide public equestrian and hiking trail easement was required to be recorded prior to land use clearance, yet this condition was not met, but the permits were unlawfully issued, violating the Coastal Act and the permit conditions set forth in several CDPs. Slide, please. Since the trail has gone unrecorded, the commission has the opportunity to require the county to open a southern entrance via Sarah Polo Drive, a public street. This would allow immediate public-to-public access once recorded.
Santa Barbara County is using a 1-foot buffer again, 1 foot at Serapola Drive, which the same property owner owns, as an excuse to deny the southern entrance. For the past 6 months, I've publicly urged this commission to ensure the public trail is immediately recorded and open. To date, no substantial response has been provided to me or the public by the commission, other than we're, quote, working on it. We deserve better. A public-to-public connection is available now. If the commission does not act now, I fear the public will never enjoy this hiking and equestrian trail, as Santa Barbara County has a history of unlawfully exempting this property from the Coastal Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Brad Snook, followed by Alex Bennett, Charles Thomas, and Lydia Ponce. Brad Snook, if you can unmute yourself.
Yeah, I'm Brad Snook. I'm the vice chair of our county's Surfrider chapter in San Luis Obispo. I'm here today to thank the commission and staff for your ongoing commitment to Oceano Dunes. After all, like many other beaches in California, Oceano Beach should not be a highway. Billy has slides, about 100 of them I like to run through for, I'm just kidding. Thank you, Billy, and thank you, commissioners.
Thank you. We don't see Alex Bennett or Charles Thomas, so we're going to go right to Lydia Ponce.
Good morning, relatives. I was speaking with you prior about the disaster gentrification that's happening because of the fires. That does not mean that we do not want to share space and be in good community and good relations with all of our relatives. However, with the added missing money, with the added missing funds for houseless services or homes to pull people into a safe space, sleeping rough on the streets, we have come across, there's a couple of aunties, include myself in that here in Venice, that have had disastrous stories where people are falling through the cracks. Our CD11 representative is now the mayor of Pacific Palace. She is the fire that has gone through to sweep people's belongings. What I'm saying is that the people that are deserving of having time from the county and the city, they've all been notified that one person have a fire in one of the 15 buildings was not given Airbnb. She's affected by a fire. She was not given an Airbnb. Young relative, black relative, who actually has been sleeping in her car for 2 months. And everybody knows about that. So this is very selective and it's very racist. We have a lot of people with a lot of mold in these affordable buildings. So either they were built with inferior materials or pipes that are leaking are not fixed, maybe inferior materials there. People are being told, a lot of residents are being told, sign on the dot, we'll get you another voucher, and they're basically being evicted. Well, there's ways to evict people. They're running out of money. December of 2026, the county, the city, you cut it, whichever way you look at it, money is missing that was so set aside for the most awesome humanitarian thing. That's why we keep saying people, all relatives on the streets. The person didn't have their rent paid by St. Joseph's. And what happened was St. Joseph said they were going to show up at court because this one gentleman who's actually has his daughter didn't show up to court. He's now being evicted. Help us, please. Help us, please. Thank you.
Okay, so we have a phone number ending in 902. I'm going to allow you to talk. Hopefully you're either Alex Bennett or Charles Thomas. Please state your name.
Good morning. I attempted to register through the speaker portal many times yesterday and was not able to. My name is Nina Beatty. I want to comment on the geophysical surveys that Monterey Bay Aquarium and other agencies are using in the coastal and delta waters. They are claiming, along with state and federal agencies, that because the sonar frequencies are outside hearing range, there's no problem. But this is dangerously wrong. It's pseudoscience. And it's urgent that the Coastal Commission step in because the ocean is being maimed. Sound is a wave of pressure that acts just like an actual wave. It can move through both solids and liquids and pass through our bodies as well. That's the actual science. There's two issues, main issues, the sound intensity or strength, which is related to the decibels, and the resonance and harmonics, which is related to the frequencies. 150 decibels can kill you. Lower decibel levels damage internal organs, including the lungs, rupture membranes, cause embolisms, and cause animals to strand. OSHA's maximum permitted decibels for humans for 1/2 hour is only 110 decibels. Military LRAD weapons operate 162 decibels. Mabari and other survey equipment blasted 221 decibels, shattering lethal levels that are as loud as a Saturn V rocket, which would destroy the rocket except for sound deflection equipment. Decibels are logarithmic. By my calculations, 221 decibels are 1 trillion times more powerful than OSHA limits. Powerful resonance of the sonar frequencies also damage organs and whole bodies, just as a wine glass shatters on the right frequency, and the Tacoma Narrows Bridge is another example. In addition, sound travels much farther in water than in the air, increasing impacts to wildlife farther away. None of this is being considered. Sonar surveys are devastating everything up and down the food chain. Plankton, krill, fish, seals and sea lions, otters, crab, squid, octopus, starfish, dolphins, turtles, diving birds, whales, and any humans in the water. It's damaging this fragile ecosystem, and these surveys appear to violate CCR Title 14, Section 632B-74, which says in part it's unlawful to injure, damage, or take any living marine resource except recreational commercial take. These surveys are even happening in near marine protected areas. Please stop these dangerous surveys before more ocean animals are destroyed. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. That completes our public comments.
Okay. I'd like to bring it back to the commission to see if there's any questions or comments from commissioners on anything that was mentioned during public comment. Seeing none, Commissioner Nolloff?
I was just wondering about Hermosa Beach and where that is in the LCP.
I'm going to have to look into that and bring back information on it. Okay. I noted it in my to go check with staff, see status, but we can let you know.
Thanks.
All right, seeing no further questions or comments, I did also want to just see if we could, if there's any response regarding the Santa Barbara hiking equestrian trail that's been blocked.
Again, unfortunately, Lisa Hagee left before I had the chance to ask her, and so again, I don't have an update for you, but I've noted it, and I will come back with an update next month.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. All right, that concludes general public comment. We'll move on to item number 5, consent calendar, and so I'll turn it back to staff to open us up on this item.
Thank you, Chair. We don't have any items that are agendized on the consent calendar, so that moves us to item 6. That's for items to be moved from the regular to the consent calendar for all districts on the agenda today. As mentioned during the agenda changes earlier this morning, there are 4 items that staff recommends be moved to the consent calendar. Those are 9A for consistency determination by FAA and NASA for contracted landings of a crew and cargo capsule in the Pacific Ocean, item 11A for the CDP application by Point Lobos Holdings in Stinson Beach, item 13A for the LCP amendment by the City of Pacific Grove, item 13C for Santa Cruz County LCP amendment to update its affordable housing overlay. I wanted to quickly highlight that last item, the affordable housing LCP amendment, is one staff appreciates working with Santa Cruz County on, is glad to be able to bring it forward for your consideration as submitted. It's our understanding it has broad community support as well. I'd also note that in regard to item 9A, we received one email from a member of the public, Lisa Savage, raising concerns about future increases in the number of landings and noise and debris they may generate. These concerns are addressed in both the staff report and addendum, but to summarize, the project is limited to NASA contracted movement of NASA astronauts and cargo, such as scientific equipment, back to Earth from the International Space Station, landing in the Pacific Ocean about 12 miles offshore of Southern California. Any future increase would be subject to additional review, and we determine that the landing location far offshore and expected full recovery of capsule and parachutes minimize potential release of marine debris. Regarding sound, FAA and NASA show in their consistency determination that sonic booms generated from this activity would be significantly less than those associated with the rocket launches the Commission has recently reviewed and would not extend onshore, minimizing potential effects to marine wildlife. I believe we also have 2 speakers signed up on this item, but staff continues to recommend inclusion of this CD on the consent calendar and is not aware of any opposition to the other projects moved to the consent calendar. The applicants are in agreement with the staff recommendations, and we're therefore recommending that the commission vote and approve this item.
Thank you very much. Are there any members of the public signed up to speak on any item on the consent calendar?
Yes. For F9, we have Lorna Moffitt and Brian Rosen and Nina Beatty. And then for F13, Joseph Sidor is available for questions, and John Big is wished to speak as well.
Okay. So if you heard your name, are any of those members of the public here in person?
No, they are all on Zoom.
Okay.
Lorna, if you can unmute yourself, please. Lorna?
Yes. Excuse me, commissioners. Please do not okay this project, especially because of Elon Musk's need to have this approved, and he is gutting the EPA. So any project now under this kind of influence that's going to be so destructive to our environment should not be approved, because we don't have an EPA, and the interests of Elon Musk are so strong now that there's no one that can go against him, to my knowledge. And therefore, please do not approve this project. It's destructive in every way, no matter what they say. And we have to preserve the earth right now. That's got to be the focus, number one. And if we don't do that, we're not going to survive. And who wants to go to Mars? You know, it's a dead planet. So why are we going to a dead one while we're killing our own? Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Brian Rosen. Brian, are you going to mute yourself?
Hi. Brian Rosen here. I wish to, I think it's important to oppose the SpaceX at Vandenberg. It just isn't an appropriate place to have rocket launches with all the harm it does to the environment, the animals, the sonic booms, the space debris. And the Coastal Commission needs to stand for what's right, even if politically SpaceX is going to go through, because it's just not right to do it there. It's out in the desert, maybe, but Elon Musk is making so much money off of our government, and he's cutting something like $800 million from Medicaid. He's gutting Social Security. He's getting rid of the food stamps program with the help of the Republican Congress, another $200 billion. The list goes on and on, and yet we're going to keep giving him millions of dollars. This is not a priority. If they're going to be cutting all the vital programs that benefit the people, that protect the people's health, and gutting getting rid of the Department of Education and so forth, and persecuting anybody who's into DEI, taking out the word gay, canceling the Enola Gay airplane exhibit from the Pentagon because it has the word gay in it, whatever. They're doing so many horrible things. We need to preserve our money for what's important, not for SpaceX. This is not a priority. There's too many problems on this earth to be spending all this money in so rich people can make their fortunes going into outer space. Maybe someday after we solve some of our problems, we could do that. But in the meantime, there's a lot of suffering people. And under Trump, there's going to be a lot more unless we can somehow stop it. These are ruthless people. Ruthless people.
Thank you. Up next is Nina Beatty.
Thank you. My name is Nina Beatty. SpaceX plans to impact the Pacific Ocean with Dragon 10 times per year, nearly once a month. And this is just the beginning. At Vandenberg, SpaceX started with 6 per year, then it went to 36, and now the Space Force wants over 100. How many more landings for Dragon? When will space tourism start landing in the Pacific, either from SpaceX or other companies? The sonic booms, the pollution from fuel, dumping drag chutes and ropes, the ships and the planes and the helicopter noise and traffic for retrieval of these vessels, and the accidents. as well as more microwave tracking facilities. Musk's damage to the ocean and the land here on Earth is well documented as he rushes to get to Mars, but he plans to even would like to nuke Mars. EPA fined SpaceX over environmental violations in South Texas last year for 7 separate instances in 1 year. But Texas regulators have rolled over SpaceX, allowing it to dump more than 30,000 gallons of industrial wastewater in South Texas wetlands, a practice the company had already been doing. Sonic booms there are equivalent to explosions, as they have here in Vandenberg. There are no independent assessments of the claims that the sonic booms would be less, and the sonic booms are still toxic. And the accidents. 2 rockets exploded this year and showered Turks and Caicos with fuel and debris. How many fires and injuries resulted? We haven't heard anything or any payment by SpaceX to cover this. The Boca Chica damage is ongoing and horrifying, but SpaceX money and power is bullying agencies to allow this. The ocean is in such stress. We must take every effort to save this Earth and quit subjecting it to additional impacts. That means standing up to powerful corporations like SpaceX and also to agencies like NASA that seem to make their own rules and not care about the ocean impacts, not care about the environmental impacts. So I ask the Coastal Commission to oppose staff information on this and turn down this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is John Biggs.
Good morning.
F-13, sorry.
Yeah, this is item 13A. Good morning, commissioners. My name is John Biggs, and I am the interim community development director for the city of Pacific Grove. We just wanted to be here to thank the commission for the grant that it provided for us to complete this amendment to the LCP. And we also want to compliment and thank staff for the work that it has done to date to get us to this point. So we are in support of your approval of the amendment and are available to answer any questions if the commission has them. Thank you.
Thank you. That completes our comment.
All right. Any questions or comments on items on consent? Seeing none, is there a commissioner who would be willing to move the consent calendar, regular calendar items removed and placed on consent?
Move consent.
Second. So we have a motion by Commissioner Hart, seconded by Commissioner Nazlov. Is there any member of the commission who objects to unanimous approval? Seeing none, that passes unanimously with Commissioner Harmon absent. With that, that moves us on to item number 7, Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency. I'll turn it to staff for the presentation on that item.
Thank you, Chair. This is the Deputy Director report for Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency Division. We have 2 negative determinations to report and 1 waiver for a kelp restoration project in Mendocino County. I don't believe we have any speakers signed up to speak on this item, so we'd ask whether 3 or more commissioners object to the waiver in the Deputy Director's report.
Okay. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none, are there any members of the public signed up to speak on this item?
None.
Okay. Are there 3 or more commissioners who object to the staff's recommendation? Seeing none, commission concurs. That moves us on to item number 7A, informational presentation on U.S. Navy training and testing operations. And I'll turn to staff to kick us off on that item.
Thank you. And with that, I'd like to invite our environmental scientist, Walt Deppe, to introduce this item. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Next, we will have a presentation from Alex Stone, the environmental program manager for the U.S. Navy Pacific Fleet, who will provide an informational briefing on the Navy's proposed Hawaii-California training and testing program offshore of California, for which they recently submitted a consistency determination. This presentation is intended to provide the commission with information about the program before you officially hear the federal consistency review at a future hearing, tentatively scheduled for June. Given the expansive nature of the proposed continuation of and modifications to ongoing Navy training and testing activities offshore of California, it seemed prudent to give the Navy an opportunity to prime the Commission on the extent of activities proposed in this next round of the program before the official hearing on the matter. Thank you, and now I will turn it over to Mr. Stone.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioners, for the opportunity to speak today. On behalf of the Navy, my name is Alex Stone, and we always welcome the chance to talk about the importance of the training and testing that we do in California and our environmental protection for the coastal resources. So, and also want to thank the staff, and as Walt mentioned, this is an informational briefing in preparation for the hearing that Walt mentioned is tentatively scheduled for June in San Diego. So next slide. I'm sorry, I probably have to alternate between putting on my glasses to read my slides and at that age here, we're kind of going back and forth. But next slide. So I think we covered this. We've submitted a consistency determination, and I just, by way, a little more background on myself, I have been doing environmental planning for the Navy. I'm with the U.S. Pacific Fleet, which is headquartered in Hawaii, but I am in San Diego, and I've a veteran of many consistency processes over the years for Navy testing and training up and down the coast. So we're coming back, as we'll get into in the presentation, for a new phase, which I'll kind of explain why, what's changed this phase. So I'll give kind of the overview of kind of the five W's, what we're doing, where, the background, and then focus on what's changed for this phase as opposed to the past phases. And then I'll talk a bit about what I think is really the thing that we're most proud of is mitigation measures, how the Navy looks at all of our activities and looks to reduce or avoid impacts wherever we can while we're still doing that critical military mission. So we kind of balance, I'll kind of talk about how we do that. Then I'll mention the other regulatory processes that are underway, just quickly to talk about the other kind of concurrent processes with the federal consistency. And then kind of review some of the prior issues that have been brought up by the commission and kind of where we are with those moving forward. So again, like Walt said, I'm kind of going to keep it at a high level, and I think at the next meeting we'll get more into the specifics of the issues in the consistency determination. But it was suggested to the Navy last time, and like Walt mentioned, that we since it's a lot of information that we just don't come in at the hearing, so at least you're sort of aware. And also, we are totally available to meet with commissioners separately, individually, if we're absolutely available, because there is quite a bit of activities that are part of this consistency determination. And, of course, just the last thing, that obviously the Navy has a huge presence in California, and we really do value the relationship between the Navy and the commission over the many years for not just training and testing, but all of our coastal installations. Value that relationship. Next slide. So just kind of at the most basic, what are the activities? We're talking about all the at-sea training and testing activities we do. This project does not include land areas. We've separated the land areas, and this really focuses on the marine environment. So it doesn't include like the Navy-owned islands that we use for training and testing, like Camp Pendleton. The focus is at sea, but it is all training and testing. We distinguish the two activities, training and testing. Testing is new technology, new platforms that are being developed for introduction into the fleet. And then training is when they're actually in the fleet and we're training sailors in preparation for deployment. So we kind of distinguish the two, even though a lot of the activities are similar, but we talk about testing and training distinctly. Obviously, realistic training and testing directly supports our readiness. There's really no substitute for live training and testing. We want to practice as we fight, as we say. There's a lot of different analogies we use, but obviously, if you flew here, your pilot might have trained in simulators, but you're hoping that this is actually not the first time he's actually landed a plane in real life. He's not just relying on simulators and virtual. We often get this question: why can't we do everything virtual with computers? And we do a huge amount of training and testing with virtual. If you're ever, I think one of the most advanced simulators we have, if you're ever in San Diego, I'd offer you a tour. We have a simulator in San Diego at the Naval Station there that is a actual bridge of a destroyer that actually moves around, and the room can look like any port in the world. And I've been in there and felt seasick after leaving. Is that realistic? So we are definitely heavily invested in virtual, all that, but there's no substitute for live training. And that's especially important when we get into sonar and explosives, which is a lot of the focus of the environmental analysis. So the The training and testing is in all different areas, air, surface, undersea, and all different warfare areas. Because there's so many activities, we think about warfare areas like mine warfare, anti-submarine warfare, surface warfare, where you're engaging, you know, ships on the surface. So we kind of organize it that way to get your arms around all the different types of training. Amphibious warfare, another area where we're the Navy is bringing the Marines ashore somewhere. So that's kind of, you kind of think about the whole, everything that the Navy might do, we really do it here in California. Air, surface, all the different warfare. And again, a lot of the environmental focus is on sonar and explosives, and a lot of our mitigation measures is built around sonar and explosives. Most of the training, just as kind of a broad statement, is conducted far outside the ocean or outside the coastal zone. And when you look at maps, you'll see that. Especially, there are obviously some exceptions, like I talked about amphibious. Obviously, you're going through the coastal zone to move ashore. But most of the more complex, large-scale events are you know, well offshore. The importance of the ranges here, you know, often we get that, you know, why can't you do this further? Do it somewhere else, do it out in the ocean. The importance of the California ranges really are, they're irreplaceable. We use these ranges to certify our deploying strike groups in the Pacific. For all the forces we have on the West Coast before we deploy them, they rely on Southern California to get that certification. And it's critical that we deploy strike group at a high level of readiness. We want them to be deployed as best as trained as possible, and we rely on these ranges. So it's a combination of the kind of natural geography we have of where our bases are, the islands, the bathymetry, the offshore area, the infrastructure that the Navy has developed over decades of operating in these same areas, and then, of course, married that with the proximity of our forces. We don't want to have people travel thousands of miles to train. We want them to be able to train near where our forces are based. Next slide. So specifically about the environmental planning process that we're doing right now with the consistency determination, we're currently operate under an EIS and the associated regulatory processes that we completed in 2018. And that was called HSTT. We changed the acronym, and you'll see the reason why. It used to just focus on Southern California, and now it looks across more of the state waters, and I'll show you that on a map. But associated with that EIS, there is a permit that was issued by the National Marine Fisheries Service, which has a 7-year duration for that. That's governed. The law allows them to issue a permit under the Marine Mammal Protection Act for up to 7 years. So it expires in the end of 2025, which is the reason why we're updating the environmental planning. So, but while that's sort of a requirement that we need to keep our compliance current with the MMPA, it does also allow us to kind of evolve what we're covering and to change the EIS and kind of look strategically. So what the new EIS supports is it allows us to keep doing what we have been doing, and it also includes all new requirements that we have. You know, we're always developing new techniques, new platforms, new systems, and our force structure. If there's forces that are in different places that are now here, we look at the training associated with those. And then, of course, the science. You know, the science is always evolving. So when we do a new EIS, we bring in the latest information about marine mammal density, threshold and criteria for that we should be looking at when we evaluate sonar and explosives. So latest science. It also allows us to reassess the study area. Do we need more room or do we want to change anything? And we'll talk about what that means specifically. And then sort of a strategy and efficiency. Should we combine different things, or are there other things that we'd be subject to a separate process that makes sense to include here? And I'll talk about those. And then it, of course, supports NIMS, their requirements for NEPA associated with their rulemaking that they go through. But last bullet is an important one that I always want to emphasize, is the vast majority of these activities are the same activities in the same areas that we've been doing for decades. There are some changes, but if you look at just the vast majority, we're really the same. Next slide. I mentioned NIMS, NOAA Fisheries, several times. They're a cooperating agency. They work really closely with us. They also are the regulatory agency that we have reporting requirements, adaptive management. They're a partner in us throughout the whole process. We're kind of have a constant, a long-standing relationship, and not just here, really across everywhere where the Navy trains, whether it's further out in the Pacific or on the East Coast. Next slide. So the major changes, the study area changes, I'm going to show on a map, which is a better than I can describe it in words. New participating agencies. In the past, it was just the Navy that did include the Marine Corps, but this phase, we're also covering Coast Guard training, which is often done with the Navy or similar to Navy training. Army and Air Force. Not every Army and Air Force activity is in this EIS, but when they're operating with the Navy or operating in a similar way, and this is kind of a reflection of the evolution of maritime activities being more joint service. You know, traditionally, back when I started doing this, it was really only the Navy that was doing activities at sea, and now you have really all the services looking at maritime activities. So we incorporated those activities, reflects kind of more joint operations. And then we are including some range improvements and sustainment projects that I have a list of, that so it's not the training and testing activity, but it's a infrastructure improvement that kind of supports the training, and I'll talk about those as we go through. And then again, there are some new activities. I know I just mentioned on the last slide that it's pretty much the same activities, but there are some new activities. I don't think anyone would be surprised. We have more and more unmanned systems in all areas. I think that's, you know, whether it's air, surface, subsurface, whether it's, you know, how it's integrated, it's, you know, that's evolving almost every day. It's much more unmanned systems. Another one is pile driving. So the environmental issue is the acoustics associated with the pile driving, that training done at Port Hueneme. So that's just an example. There's a few activities, but again, mostly the same type of things. Next slide. Study area includes both Hawaii and California, and we'll get more into detail in California. The Hawaii area looks like, you know, half the Pacific Ocean, but really most of the activities take place around the Hawaiian Islands, not that it's relevant exactly for this conversation, but that larger area is more for like a missile defense type, high altitude intercept, but most of the actual Navy training in Hawaii is around the Hawaiian Islands. But next slide, we'll kind of get more into California. So the left side of this slide is the current study area, the 2018 one, the one that's governing our activities right now. And on the right shows the expanded study area. So you can see a considerable expansion. And I'll kind of walk through each of those areas here. Next slide. So what are the expansions of the study area or consolidations with other areas? We have a, this is when I should have brought a pointer. I'm sorry, I don't have a pointer, so I'll have to talk about it. But the first one is new airspace areas, which are kind of north and south of the blue shaded area. And that is an expansion that we're working with the FAA, so, you know, well offshore of the coastal zone, obviously. But this is kind of reflects our evolution of our tactics to operate our carrier strike group across a larger area. You kind of spread out the strike group more, especially the airplanes associated with the strike group. So an airspace proposal. Second bullet, expand more along the California coastline. And this mostly has to, we're not like moving our major exercises closer to the coast. This is really just an area more for for autonomous vessels testing. Port Hueneme, I mentioned, is now part of this. And then the big expansion areas is we're combining two other range areas, the Point Magoo Sea Range, which off of, you know, the coast here in Ventura County, the central coast. And that was subject of a separate consistency determination and EIS in the past, although the activities are similar, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. And also the Northern California area, which I'll talk more about also. And then the last study area change is four amphibious approach lanes in the Central California area, and I have a map that shows that better. Next slide. So just real quickly, this is the vast majority of the activities are in off San Diego and Southern California. This is just kind of the existing range, no change, but this is kind of like the vast majority of the activities take place in this area. So just want to show that with the San Clemente Island is a real sort of center point of a lot of the training. And that area to the west of San Clemente Island is where we have an instrumented underwater range, which is important as I'll kind of talk about the expansion of the underwater instrument. These are cables and hydrophones that we use for kind of like radar, but underwater, so we can track objects underwater. So that's kind of this is the key area for really the whole study area. Next slide. Point Magoo. Point Magoo is, when I talked at the beginning about training versus testing, Point Magoo's focus is really mostly on testing. So there's not the high level of activity that you have in the Southern California area. So these are more like missile type testing, more kind of sophisticated, more like engineers than sailors that are kind of operating in this area. But the activities are similar. And even though this had previously been a separate consistency determination, we're combining it this time because of the similarity of activities and just the efficiency of looking at it more holistically. Next slide. Northern California, I'll try and just make this kind of brief, but Northern California is the reason we have these ranges in Northern California goes back to when the Navy had a bigger presence in the San Francisco area. Obviously, that, you know, the Navy has moved south and closed all of our bases in San Francisco area. But these Northern California ranges were the offshore ranges associated with the forces that were in San Francisco. So we previously hadn't been using them heavily because the Navy is in Southern California in San Diego. But we are using them more, so we decided to include them, even though it's a much less level of activity. In the past, it's really mostly been aviation-type training because the Navy, we do have our strike fighter jets in the Central Valley at Lemoore, and they fly out over these warning areas. So this is a new area that has kind of a similar area. The map doesn't show it well, but the range areas are actually not near the coast. They don't start till fairly far off the coast. But this is a new part of the study area this time. Next slide. Amphibious landing corridors. This is a new activity that the Marines, that we're proposing to support the Marines. And this is a proposal to do a small amount of amphibious landings in these central coast locations. Our EIS is really looking at the Navy getting the Marines to shore. There's a separate process to look at the use of these beaches by the Marines and land use agreements, coastal impacts, other environmental planning processes associated with the actual landing. So our scope in this EIS, as I mentioned earlier, is just the at-sea activities. And so there would not be any... the only activity in the corridors is the transportation. There's not the sonar and explosives that I talked about early. It's really just moving from these larger Navy vessels offshore to smaller vessels to these amphibious areas. Next slide. Range modernizations. I talked about the special use airspace. I talked about the expanding the instrumented shallow water areas with instrumentation cables and hydrophones around San Clemente Island. Mine warfare, that's another range modernization. These are kind of like putting concrete shapes on the seafloor or suspended in the water column that we use for training purposes. So the proposed action includes installation of those in certain areas. And then also installation and maintenance of an underwater platform, which is like a platform that unmanned underwater vehicles or divers can host from and swim and attach from, and that's proposed off of San Diego, off of Coronado. Next slide. So just, I won't go through all of the details, but just the column to the left is sort of time, and so we've been doing these large-scale consistency determinations, environmental plannings for for quite a few years, and we're organizing them into phases. So you can kind of see the trend over the years as to include more activities. Like we combine California and Hawaii. We have a range off of Coronado in San Diego called the Silver Strand that used to be its own separate environmental study, EIS. So you can see we've sort of combined them into this one kind of more comprehensive activity or EIS. And again, it's because the activities are similar and we sort of feel it's more efficient to look at it holistically. Next slide. This slide just, I think I covered this, but I think the point more than just the numbers here, the point I guess I would like to make here is that this large study area could imply that all the areas are used similarly, and that's really not the case, you know, even though it looks like we have this vast area. The vast majority of the activities take place in the established Southern California ranges off of San Diego, with some in Hawaii, some in Point Magoo, and even less in that Northern California area. And we would anticipate that to continue. Next slide. Sorry, I just have a few more here. Marine mammal, protecting marine species, probably the thing that we're most, as I said at the very beginning, that we're most proud of is how we've taken all these activities, looked at each one of them, figured out how we can reduce environmental impacts while still being able to do the training and testing, which is very complicated because this is training that has to work every day for sailors that come and go and are very busy doing other things. So we spent a huge amount of our time developing these marine mammal mitigation measures and for other species too. And we have a system that sort of automates it. So every time a ship is going to do something, they have a process where they absolutely must follow the environmental procedures that come out of these environmental planning processes. So people like me doing the environmental planning, we figured out the mitigation measures, and then we figured out a way to implement it to make sure it absolutely happens every time. And we kind of organize the mitigation measures into two broad categories. One are activity-based. This is like every time you're doing this activity, you'll do this. And the other one is geographic, like certain areas have restrictions or limitations when you're in a certain area. So we kind of think about them in those two broad categories. Next slide. Then the activity-based measures, you can see sailors doing it right here on the pictures here. But it's kind of a complicated one that depends on the activity they're doing. But generally what they're doing is if they're doing an activity that has an impact, they're looking in the area to make sure there's no marine species present before they do that. And sounds kind of simple, but there's a whole training program and certification for their being able to look at marine mammals, being able to be lookouts. Of course, they're looking for other things, not just marine mammals, but so a whole program. And the techniques they use have been developed with the National Marine Fisheries Service. So we train our sailors in a program that is certified by the National Marine Fisheries Service. Next slide. Geographic, I mentioned this one is certain areas we are going to impose either restrictions where we won't do an activity at all, or a limitation, like only a certain number of hours of active sonar in an area. So for this phase, as compared to the last phase, we went back and reassessed all the areas because a lot of these areas were based on a publication by NIMS about biologically important areas. And since the 2018 document, that has completely changed. So we did a reassessment where we look at each of these areas, we look at whether would it actually be beneficial? Are we even doing something there where a geographic mitigation makes sense? And if it is, you know, can we do it there without having an unacceptable impact on training and readiness? So we go through that kind of very deliberative process in each of these new areas and have come up with the mitigation that we're proposing, still subject to all the completion of all the regulatory processes that we're right in the middle of too. So this is kind of our proposal at this stage. And I have a map right next. So yeah, this one I could been a lot, but long time. But basically, the areas in yellow are areas where there are limitations on active sonar, and there's one kind of, it doesn't, at the scale, it's tough to show, that's right outside the San Diego, that's for specifically for blue whales. So, and there's, these figures are in more detail in the consistency determination. And then there's also an area off of San Diego where we have a special geographic mitigation measure for vessel, to avoid vessel collisions, where we have a real-time system where if a Navy ship sees an aggregation of marine mammals, they would immediately notify all the other Navy ships in the area that there's an aggregation of marine mammals so they can increase their vigilance to avoid vessel strike. That's in that kind of box area, which is the primary area that we operate vessels. Next slide. Marine species monitoring research, as the chart kind of shows there, which I can't read from here, I won't even try and put on my glasses, but the Navy is second to NOAA, the largest sponsor of marine mammal research among the, across the federal government, and we have an extensive program where we're doing everything from looking at trying to understand better how sound impacts marine mammals to actually going out and collecting density and abundance of marine mammals on our ranges and how that varies over time. So a huge number of people whose full-time job it is working for the Navy to do marine mammal research and monitoring. And we also, I guess just one other just side note, the underwater ranges that have those hydrophones, we have a program where we have adjusted the frequencies of the hydrophones so we can pick up on marine mammal vocalization. So we're using our, you know, our range infrastructure to monitor marine mammals. Next slide. Other regulatory processes. So as part of the EIS, we're doing federal consistency with both California, you, and as also in, we have a similar process underway with Hawaii. But in addition to that, we're also working with really closely with all these other regulatory agencies for compliance with all of these other laws and requirements. And all of those are captured in the whole EIS process that I mentioned earlier that we're going to trying to complete by the end of 2025 when our existing authorization expires. Next slide. So I think this is my probably my last slide. So as I mentioned, I've been doing this a few times. Some of the past things that have come up, and I will say right away, we've tried to, when I've spoken before to the commissioners, explained if there's something that the commission is asking us to consider. We do, of course, consider it, but we've spent a lot of time explaining why it does or doesn't work. And we've tried to put all of that into the consistency determination because I know some of these issues are sort of longstanding. So these are some of them, and I could talk more about these, but just briefly, in the past, a lot of the focus has been on the adequacy of the mitigation, like the mitigation zones. I said where we have our lookouts, where we will power down sonar or not do explosives if there's marine mammals in that area. Sometimes we've had a discussion about whether the size is adequate, whether it should be like a larger area, and I think our response in that in the past has been, the size is based on what we can practically see. We're not going to commit to a larger area than we feel like we can actually thoroughly cover. So even though it might be great if we could have a 5-kilometer shutdown zone, I mean, that this is not realistic based on the bridge height of where the lookout is on the ship. So we kind of look at everything through a practicality lens, and that's one. Vessel speed restrictions. That's another one in the past, and that's where the Navy in the past has not been willing to agree to a certain numerical speed limit, like 8 knots or something like that, and that's probably, you know, we'll continue to be our position. We really have the authority of the safety of the vessel is a responsibility of the commanding officer, so obviously slowing down is something that they would do, but we're not going to have a certain specific speed restriction in place. Another one is third-party lookouts. I kind of talked about how we develop a training program for our lookouts with the National Marine Fisheries Service, but the ones doing the lookouts are the actual sailors on the ship. So some people, it's been suggested, you know, should we hire professional marine observers or have the National Marine Fisheries Service themselves on all of our Navy ships? And we've considered that, and it's really just not practical. And we're comfortable with the program that has NIMS with us in the curriculum development, but not actually on our ships. Just not practical for a whole lot of reasons that are in our written explanation. Geographic mitigations, I kind of talked about the process we use. That's been an area in the past, like, you know, can you restrict activities in this area or this area? And we do, we consider all of those, and we kind of have the whole methodology we looked at to develop the mitigation areas that we have. New technologies, again, we're usually close to agreement on that one in the past. It's like, I think if there's a new technology, we're always willing to look at it, but again, it becomes a practicality with the number of ships we have and the turnover of the crews and everything. So sometimes someone comes up with a great idea that might work for a one-time type event, but not for, you know, the training we're doing every day. Research and science, that's probably an area we're always willing to collaborate more, because we certainly acknowledge that there is uncertainty in this area about, you know, how sound impacts marine mammals and how we can better understand that. And I know the Navy has presented our research and science to the Commission before, and we're always willing to do a specific presentation just on that topic. Because, you know, that's a whole other presentation in and of itself. And yeah, lastly, I said the CD, we tried to, in our attempt to try and narrow any sort of disagreement and get to agreement, hopefully, in June, we do kind of talk about each of these past issues and sort of how we've tried to work with the commission on those. Next slide. This is just a schedule. I just want to say to Walt and Cassidy, we're working very closely with the staff, and I really appreciate that. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we really value our relationship, so we're going to we've already been, you know, talking about this project as soon as we started, and we're going to keep working with the staff all the way through the development of the staff report and leading to the meeting in June. And this is kind of the schedule I sort of mentioned. Everything's working toward completing the process this summer so that we can support our renewal of our permit to continue to allow us to test and train in California. Next slide. There it is. That's what it's all about. Aircraft carrier operating off San Diego. And I guess the last thing to say, if you ever want to come out, get on a ship, get underway, either pierside or underway. I can't guarantee you like a jet ride, but I can definitely get you on that aircraft carrier. I definitely can.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for that presentation. It's really helpful. I'd like to start by seeing if there's any member of the public signed up to speak on this item.
Yes, we have one, Michael Jasny. Michael Jasny, if you can unmute yourself.
Yes, I'm unmuted. Can I begin?
Yes.
Well, thank you and good morning, commissioners. My name is Michael Jasny, and I direct the Marine Mammal Protection Project at NRDC. As Alex's presentation suggested, the Navy conducts an enormous amount of training and testing on its Southern California Range complex each year, more, I believe, than in any other offshore range anywhere in the country. Of course, NRDC agrees with the Navy that military readiness is important, but all of that activity translates annually to thousands of underwater detonations with enough explosive weight to kill marine mammal, and thousands of hours of high-intensity military sonar known to cause a range of impacts on whales and other species over large areas of ocean. And so this is a matter that the Commission has paid very close attention to in the past. In my limited time, I want to underscore the two broad ways in which the Navy's current proposal differs from the one it last presented the Commission 7 years ago. One, it's larger, as Alex said. Some of that is from the Navy bringing two additional ranges under this review, the ranges off Point Magoo in Northern California. But the Navy is also proposing a substantial expansion of its Southern California range complex to the north and to the south, as you saw from the map. So a good deal more of California's coasts and oceans are coming before the Commission in this consistency review. Two, The Navy's proposal involves new technology that is concerning for conservation. In particular, I want to call attention to its intended use of large, unmanned, high-speed surface vessels that could present a higher risk of collision with whales, and its use of new high-intensity sonar that, unlike conventional systems which run for a few seconds every half minute, sound almost constantly in the water. These are systems that the Commission has not had to consider before. These two developments make it all the more important that the Navy really work to maximize its efforts to protect California's marine life. Yet its current proposal actually removes some of the habitat mitigation zones for marine mammals that it has observed over the last decade. And can I have another minute or two?
If you could actually maybe send your comments in via email to the commission, we can have those on record and take those into consideration. But thank you for your time.
Okay. Well, we will be submitting our comments to staff, and we look forward to speaking at future meetings as this review proceeds.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, does that end public comment?
Yes.
Okay. Let's bring it back to the commission. Are there any questions or comments from commissioners? Commissioner Nathoff? Commissioner Botko? Okay.
Thank you, and I appreciate getting a preview of what is going to be coming for us. I just wanted, you covered some of this, but I just wanted to highlight the importance of, you know, making sure that these proposals and these actions do take into account the National Marine Sanctuaries off the coast and other marine protected areas. Also, I'm acutely aware of the sonar and so and impacts for sound in the from these and that impact of marine mammals. So that's something that I'm going to be looking at very carefully as this comes before us. Just wanted to flag that.
Mr. Botko.
Yes, very briefly. I was at all, I guess, all of those hearings in the last number of years, and I just want to thank the Navy for this, in my mind, very strong effort to do the right thing in terms of doing what you need to do to defend our country, but also to defend our environment. And I think it's a game changer, and I think that it allows for the environmentalists as well as people in the military to really find some common ground because you're so open to it. And I just hope that continues. And I just want to thank you for that.
Commissioner Escalante.
A question about your monitoring. Are you guys going to be using drones too by any chance in the monitoring? I just didn't see it there.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Various types of drones, gliders. There's a number of new technologies. Yeah, and there's underwater acoustic platforms that collect information. Yeah.
Just a comment, and maybe we can expand on it the next time you come before the commission. But one of the concerns that I have, but also I feel like might come up, is just like what the community outreach plan will be to inform folks, especially about the expansion areas into the northern and central parts of California, and then the impact that will have on recreational and commercial activities, given that in these waters there's oftentimes commercial fishing or sailing or what have you. And so just how that's all going to mix together, I think, will be important for folks to know, and so, just so that, and for us to know, so that we can share it out to the community.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, agree. Yep. Yeah, I could talk more about that now or in the future, but I didn't talk quite a lot about the outreach and the coastal access, but those are topics that are addressed in the consistency determination. We'll talk more about those in June.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much for being here. That was a really great presentation, and it's really helpful to get that overview before we have the permit before us so that we can have a better understanding and kind of prepare ourselves for what's going to come forward. So really appreciate you being here today.
Yeah, great. Thanks. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. That wraps up the Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency item, which moves us on to item number – actually, no, wait. Sorry. We have one more item under that category. 8A, which is application number 9-23-0818, Southern California Gas. And I'll turn it over to staff for the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. As you said, that brings us to item 8A, the CDP application by Southern California Gas Company. to plug and abandon two observation wells in the Biona wetlands. I'd like to invite our environmental scientist, Dr. Jules Kelly, to provide the staff presentation on this item.
Good morning, Chair Cummings and Commissioners. This is item 8A. An addendum to the staff report was prepared for this item and posted online yesterday to respond to correspondence, including through some additions to the findings. For this permit application, the Southern California Gas Company proposes to plug and abandon two natural gas monitoring wells, Delray 14 and 19, located within the Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. SoCalGas is requesting to abandon Delray 14 and 19 as part of its long-term goal to reduce its footprint and abandon all active wells within the reserve. The California Geologic Energy Management Division, or CalGEM, confirmed that both wells are currently in compliance with CalGEM regulations and also confirmed that abandonment of Delray 14 and 19 would not require replacement wells. CalGEM is the state agency with principal authority over the downhole well work to ensure the integrity of gas storage wells and prevent safety risks to public health and the environment. Next slide. The proposed work is recognized under the Coastal Act as a type of repair and maintenance activity that would generally be exempt from permitting. However, because it includes clearing of more than 500 square feet of vegetation, it requires a permit pursuant to the Commission's regulations. In reviewing a repair and maintenance project such as this one, the Commission evaluates whether the proposed method of repair and maintenance is consistent with the Chapter 3 policies and does not evaluate the conformity of the underlying use. Next slide. The proposed method of the work includes bringing in a workover rig to remove the downhole piping and setting cement plugs to isolate the well from the underground gas storage zone. Following abandonment work, a backhoe breaker with other equipment would be used to remove all concrete material, exposed piping, and rig anchors. Abandonment work would take approximately 12 to 16 weeks for each well. Next slide. In order to safely operate the workover rig, SoCalGas proposes to clear about 10,000 square feet of vegetation within SoCalGas's easements at Delray 14 and 20,000 square feet at Delray 19. Both of these areas are dominated by non-native upland mustards, star thistle fields, and native coyote brush scrub. Although native plants would be cleared, the Delray 14 and 19 work areas do not rise to the level of an environmentally sensitive habitat area as defined by the Coastal Act. The Commission's senior ecologist, Dr. Jonna Engel, visited the two well sites and confirmed that neither support wetland or ESHA habitat. Next slide, please. Although the proposed vegetation clearing would not occur within ESHA or wetlands, Section 30240B of the Coastal Act requires development adjacent to recreation areas to be sited and designed to prevent impacts that would significantly degrade those areas. Therefore, staff are recommending Special Condition 2 to help assure the proposed project would not contribute to further degradation of the sites by requiring SoCalGas to submit a revised reseeding plan that includes removal of invasive plants and watering to promote native plant establishment. To avoid and minimize impacts to public access, SoCalGas would only close the public trail adjacent to the wells when necessary to protect public safety. Closures would be for a few hours, mainly during the beginning and end of abandonment work. Otherwise, the trail would be open during its normal hours. Next slide, please. The proposed grading within the work areas has the potential to adversely affect tribal cultural resources, and staff consulted with the Gabrieleno San Gabriel Band of Mission Indians and the Gabrieleno Tongva Indians of California. Based on those consultations, we're recommending Special Condition 5 to ensure SoCalGas will coordinate in good faith with the tribes to develop a plan for protection of tribal cultural resources and to retain tribal monitors during ground disturbing activities. Next slide. SoCalGas also proposes to install sound walls to limit noise and dust impacts, and silt fencing and sandbags to prevent stormwater runoff. Commission staff also recommends Special Condition 1, which would require SoCalGas to avoid construction during the breeding bird season and to maintain appropriate buffers if active nests are discovered. Next slide. I'd also like to briefly reiterate staff's response to the comments we received, which raised similar arguments to those submitted for the Delray 4 and 9 repair and maintenance project that the Commission approved last July. To put it simply, SoCalGas's proposed well abandonments are separate from CDFW's Biona Wetlands Restoration Project, and the Coastal Commission is not subject to the court's decision to decertify the EIR for that project. There is also no piecemealing in the Commission's review of SoCalGas's repair and maintenance work on its wells in the reserve, because each well has separate utility. In conclusion, staff recommends that the Commission find that with the proposed special conditions and avoidance and minimization measures, the project would comply with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act. The motion and resolution are on page 5 of the staff report. Staff are available for questions, along with CalGEM's oil and gas engineer, Jack Collender, and Andrew Vogel, Environmental Counsel for SoCalGas, is also available.
All right, thank you very much. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none, are there any members of the public signed up to speak on this item?
Yes, we have a total of 12.
Okay, well, let's get rolling.
All right. We have Jack Calder, he's available for questions. So we have Andrew Valger, Andrew Vogel, Marcia Hanscom, and Mary Beth Troutwing, and Kathy Knight. Andrew Vogel and Marcia, if you guys can go ahead and go to the podium, please. The rest will be on Zoom after that, after those two.
Good morning, Commissioners. Andrew Vogel, Senior Environmental Counsel at SoCalGas, which is the permit applicant. I wanted to thank staff for their very careful and detailed analysis of our CDP application. I wanted to very briefly address some of the project opponents' arguments, many of which are the staff report and the staff report addendum addressed very comprehensively. And then I'll be available afterwards should staff or the commission have any questions. Really quickly, some of the recent correspondence that was submitted to the record by the project opponents raised concerns about potential leaks from the proposed abandonment project. I wanted to make very clear on this question that SoCalGas has a very strong track record here of abandoning wells without any leaks or seepage problems. Just to give the commission and staff some numbers, SoCalGas has abandoned approximately 120 wells across our various storage facilities since 2016. And at Playa del Rey in particular, we've abandoned 18 wells since 2019, all with CalGEM's approval and supervision, and all of these abandonments were completed without any storage gas leaks or releases. Additionally, we perform soil vapor monitoring as a routine matter when abandoning wells, and our CDP application includes, as part of the project, soil vapor monitoring. And on top of that, CalGEM issued permits to conduct well operations at these two wells that also separately require testing to confirm no leaks and provide CalGEM the opportunity both to witness and conduct their own testing. That's pretty much all I want to cover. I think staff really addressed many of the project opponents' arguments, but again, I'm available here for any questions that the commissioners or staff might have. Thank you.
Next is Marcia Hascom.
How much time do I have?
You have 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. Well, first I want to apologize to Chair Dr. Cummings. We addressed our communications to Dr. Hart, not realizing a change had been made, so congratulations. I just want to say on behalf of Biona Institute, Coastal Lands Action Network, Defend Biona Wetlands and Protect Biona Wetlands, please do not approve this CDP. The application was not complete for the reasons in our documents that we submitted. Interesting that they call it repair and maintenance work. I heard that yesterday with Sable all day long. It was repair and maintenance work. They're not just abandoning, as staff said. That's not true. They are actually putting new wells in, slant drill wells up from the bluffs down into the site. This is an expansion and modernization of their fossil gas operation, a fossil gas operation that we should be moving toward closing if we care about climate change. And the scientists that say that methane gas is far worse now, we know, than CO2. Whether this is part of a misguided restoration project or part of an expansion and upgrading of corroded gas and oil pipes and wells in a fossil gas operation that has no business being in a state ecological reserve, it's a larger project. He just said there were 18 wells that they have abandoned. We didn't even know about that many. So this is piecemealing. This is the definition of piecemealing. It's a typical example of project splitting, which is not allowed by law. The Coastal Commission just approved two other wells last summer. I mean, 2, 4, 6, how many more? We have a list of them because they're all in the EIR for the restoration project. And whether the staff and Fish and Wildlife wants to admit it or not, it is part of the project. It's part of the description of the project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next is Mary Bev Truitt. Mary Beth, please unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead and speak. Thank you.
Thank you. I am here to reemphasize what Marsha Hanscom spoke about through her work with the Channel Law Group in the letter, is to install new fossil fuel and structure, slant drilling into the Playa del Rey oil field to extend the life of the fossil gas facility that needs to be closed if we are serious about limiting impacts of climate change, as we should be. The application submitted by SoCalGas is incomplete and misleading. SoCalGas does not reveal what is revealed in the Biona Wetlands Restoration EIR that their infrastructure abandonment and relocation was included in. That the wells that they are telling one agency, the California Coastal Commission, is merely a well abandonment project is actually part of a larger plan to install new fossil fuel infrastructure. So I'm here as a resident speaking that I am very concerned for a long time now about the fossil gas infrastructure in the Biona wetlands, not only for climate change impacts, but also for the animals and plants there, as well as the safety of the neighbors nearby. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Kathy Knight, followed by Suzanne Cummings, followed by Jan Velez Mitchell, followed by Margaret Griswold. Kathy Knight, go ahead and unmute yourself. Kathy?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go ahead and speak. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Kathy Knight. I'm on the board of the Biona Ecosystem Education Project. We've been working for 30 years to save the Biona ecosystem. And I wanted to say that we strongly support the letter submitted by Grassroots Coalition on this issue regarding no approval of abandoning these two oil wells. Because there's a dangerous situation there. It's a hazardous underground gas storage operation. There's home. It's the underground gas under homes and neighborhoods and the ecological reserve there. So we also want to say that we don't agree that there's an urgency to do this. There is no urgency at this time because the Biona Ecosystem Education Project, the EIR, was rescinded, and so there's no plan right now. And also, there's new information The Department of Water Resources acknowledges that Biona is a groundwater-dependent ecosystem via new laws, and that that needs to be looked at also. And we need the commission staff to address the important questions of grassroots coalition because they're public safety issues and they need to be addressed. And there are important issues that Grassroots Coalition has brought up. And also I want to wish Billy a happy retirement. He was wonderful. The way he helped us on presentations, it was very, very wonderful to have. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Suzanne Cumming, followed by Jane Velez Mitchell, followed by Margot Griswood, followed by Robert Van De Hook. Suzanne Cummings, go ahead and unmute yourself, please.
Congratulations, Honorable Dr. Cummings. My name is Suzanne Cumming. I'm a lawyer and member of Sierra Club. I reviewed the letter submitted by Defend Biona Wetlands, Coastal Lands Action Network, Protect Biona Wetlands, and Biona Institute. And their letters. These groups are asking to make sure the application is complete by seeking a biological opinion from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. We need these careful biological opinions first before this work proceeds. Yesterday, the commission enforcement staff showed photos of two rare bird species that were in the area where Sable Oil Company was doing unpermitted work, the southwestern willow flycatcher and the white-tailed kite. Neither Sable nor the Coastal Commission staff dismissed those birds, but there are similar rare and beautiful birds in the Biona wetlands, near where the fossil gas wells Delray 14 and 19 are. Yet Commission staff's addendum states, Commission staff consulted with senior ecologist Dr. Jana Engel, and she confirmed that the proposed project would not pose an adverse impact to burrowing owls or leaf-spiled vireo based on their ability to fly away from the disturbance and use other available habitats within the Biona wetlands. Los Angeles deserves to have wildlife and beautiful rare birds, too. These bird species are on the brink of extinction. That's what endangered means. Please do not approve this project until those biological opinions are sought and completed. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Next is Jane Velez Mitchell. If you can unmute yourself, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Jane Velez Mitchell. I'm a journalist who lives near the Biona wetlands. To approve this is to allow the piecemealing that is illegal. That piecemealing began in 2020 during COVID. An environmentalist saw the photos of SoCal Gas constructing a huge fossil fuel rig at the wetlands. She left her home and protested. And we watched on Facebook Live. Work on that well, Vitor 5, was never approved by you, this commission, but it happened anyway because your staff approved an exemption, even though endangered Belding savanna sparrows were documented in that very area. Biona is the only state ecologic reserve in all of LA County with so many rare and endangered animals. They need our help and protection. Thanks to the leadership of Dr. Kate Hucklebridge, we finally began to receive some notices of these impending projects, but not all have seen the light of day. These SoCal gas projects are all described in the environmental impact report that was decertified. I repeat, decertified by a Superior Court judge in 2023. Now, you approved Delray 4 and Delray 9 work last summer. However, now there is legal action concerning those two approvals. Now, Delray 14 and Delray 19 are before you. This is the very definition of piecemealing. Clearing all that vegetation will hurt the wildlife. It is sensitive habitat. We've seen that with our own eyes. Other well construction work has been done with mere exemptions like Delray 17. Even though mature trees used by red-shouldered hawks and other birds were chopped down as part of the project. Please, I implore you, do not approve this project until you have every other part of the project SoCal Gas intends to construct and can review it together at one time. Otherwise, this is classic piecemealing. which is not allowed under the law, respectfully. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Margo Griswood, followed by Robert Van D. Hoek, followed by Chris Kuhl, followed by Patricia McPherson, followed by Robin Rudisill, followed by Karen LaCava. Margo Griswood, if you can please unmute yourself.
Yes, I'm Margo Griswold. For some reason, my camera is not giving you my visage. I'm representing Los Angeles Audubon Society. And commissioners who may not be aware, we have the oldest education program at the Biona Wetlands, where we still adhere to involvement of community, especially schools, school children in underserved communities. And we believe in diversity, equity, and inclusion in visiting of the Biona Wetlands. We also hold public open wetlands twice a month for the public to come on areas of the wetlands to see and grow to understand the wetlands. I'm here to support Grassroots Coalition response to this project that you have all been made aware of, you should have to review. And I think it's legitimate that we ask that some of the concerns be addressed by staff. I was on a meeting with Grassroots and your staff, and they didn't seem to know anything about the gas issues. This is a unique area. It is not only a gas storage area, but it's an oil field area. It's meaningful to have monitoring wells. So where and how is this going to be monitored? I would ask you to not approve at this time until the concerns are answered in a more comprehensive and complete way. There's a potential for negative impacts by the abandonment, and those need to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Robert Van D. Hoek. I'm going to allow you to talk. Go ahead and speak, Mr. Robert. Okay. So next we'll try Chris Kuhl. We'll allow you to talk, Chris. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Chris Kuhl. Chris, if you can, go ahead and speak. All right, moving on to Patricia McPherson. If you can unmute yourself, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Patricia McPherson, Grassroots Coalition. First, I would like to address the comments made by SoCalGas and their long history of lack of leakage that was described. That's absolutely false. Grassroots Coalition has been in litigation with SoCalGas for almost 10 years that we prevailed in that litigation through the California Public Utilities Commission process. There is a Public Utilities Commission report out that is very concerned about the reservoir gas leakage, even into the Playa Vista project site. Those studies have not been done. SoCalGas has not cooperated. The CPUC is typically there after the fact of the explosions. I did provide you with numerous documents also, which is why I had some bounce backs. So these are not ex-party communications, but the leakage of SoCalGas wells is almost all of their wells have been found leaking, both up in the areas of the homes, up in the bluffs, all along the Venice Peninsula area that have all had to be reabandoned. So when you are told 2016 or 2019, that is so recent. But all I need to do is have you look at in their mineral rights, there is University City Syndicate within the freshwater marsh that is leaking over top oil field gases that are leaking like a sieve, that this commission also has jurisdiction over that marsh under 5-91-463 that no one has paid any attention to. You need to know that staff has told you these are all separate utilities, but you know what? They are all done cumulatively for their cumulative effect of being, in this case, monitoring wells to understand how that reservoir is operating. CalGEM's work has to do with the well to the bottom of the well, who is looking at the entire reservoir as an entity. There needs to be more agencies, including CARB, brought into this discussion, and we don't have answers from CalGEM yet. So please, there's no exigency. These are well-working wells, as CalGEM states. There's no...
Up next is Robin Rudisill, followed by Karen LaCava. Robin Rudisill.
Hi. Hi, Robin Rudisill, Venice. Revisions in the addendum state that SoCalGas has not proposed to conduct construction at night, going on to say, therefore, nocturnal bird species won't be harmed. Well, for the last project that SoCalGas did for Del Rey's 4 and 9, apparently staff was unaware of their plans to work at night, yet fossil fuel contractors did work there every night, and Marcia Hanscom's Playa Del Rey neighbors asked her to intervene. So she asked naturalist Jonathan Coffin if he would take some photos documenting the very bright lights at both Del Rey 4 and 9, and also near where they had created a staging area. This is a very sensitive salt panay wetland area. Marcia submitted those documents to coastal staff, and initially they didn't seem to acknowledge the fact that this is an ecological reserve where numerous nocturnal species live and feed. Staff's response was that they didn't want to communicate because Defend Biona Wetlands was in litigation over the project. But finally, enough people complained and the lights were removed. That is a precedent that should make you wary. Just because SoCalGas has not informed your staff that they intend to work at night on the site does not mean they will not. What is happening here is piecemealing of a much larger project that SoCalGas is doing. They're not telling you the whole story. Who ever heard of a fossil fuel company not telling you the whole story? This is part of a larger project, and this is a typical example of project splitting or piecemealing, which you must not allow. Without reviewing these together, the analysis does not include consideration of cumulative impacts. This project was part of the Biona Wetlands Restoration Project EIR that has been decertified by a court, and now SoCalGas is breaking their project into individual pieces, piecemealing, to exempt it from CEQA review and evade the decertification. Rather than having the entire project disclosed and analyzed to avoid mitigating the true environmental impacts as is required, please do not approve this project today.
Thank you. Next is Karen LaCava. If you can unmute yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Karen LaCava, and I live in Venice. I am also on the board of directors of the Venice Chamber of Commerce and the Venice Art Crawl, and I stand with Defend the Biona Wetlands, and I am against this. I say that you vote against this proposal. It is, the impact is going to be horrendous on the wildlife, and this is so important. This is one of the last wetlands we have. Without reviewing these together, which is very important, you cannot include cumulative impacts. That's so important. I personally witnessed, I went on there and I saw that the gas company had torn down trees used for nesting by birds such as the hawk. And they did this while the permits were still pending. They hadn't even had approval of the permits and they had already torn down trees and started work that they should have waited for. This is what we are seeing the gas company doing. They are not honoring anything. They are going ahead. They want to bulldoze. They want to also flood seawater into a freshwater wetland. This is just horrendous. It's just, look what happened with the fires. We really need to think about what we are doing to this planet right now. This is our chance to save the planet. This is very important. You have got to understand that the gas company is pulling the wool over our eyes, and you need to see everything, all of the reports, not just piecemealed. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to try one more time with Chris Kuhl and Robert Van De Hoek. Chris Kuhl, if you can unmute yourself, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead and speak.
Yes. So basically, you know, it's been very disturbing to hear all the public comments about the damage committed against public lands and coastal lands, removing trees that should stay, building structures that destroy nature reserves, spraying toxic chemicals in sensitive wildlife ecological areas. And now we're at talking about Biona Ecological Reserve, which it sounds like companies such as SoCal Gas is trying to do a little bit of work at different periods of time. And the logical question here that everybody needs to answer is, how will we get a cumulative analysis of the entire project if they split it up in little pieces? When you approve something in piecemeal style, how are you going to, at some point, get the entire picture of what's been done? Because you're not going to be able to go back and say, we should not have approved step one, we should not have approved step four. So this is the danger. And that's why we are urging you not to approve this. Doing little pieces of work at a time, it's a sneaky way to get about, you know, destroying this beautiful ecological reserve. And I don't know why everybody is ignoring the most important fact, which is Superior Court said no. And there's an injunction, and they've set aside this entire project, and CDFW doesn't have the funds to complete this work. So the public, we are just really confused at why this issue is still on the table, still being debated, still permits are being considered, and there's just no explanation and no logical answer to some of these very crucial, critical questions that no one seems to be answering. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Robert Van De Hoek. If you can unmute yourself, please, Robert.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me this time?
Yes, we couldn't hear you the first time, but we can hear you this time. Thank you.
Okay, great. Hello, Mr. President. I am also, like yourself, an environmental biological scientist, and I'm also a geographer, and worked federally and with the state in LA County for over 45 years in public service. The SoCal Gas Company, which is an umbrella under the Sempra company in San Diego, has easements to get to their wells. And the roads that go to them are also wildlife habitat, as well as the well site. This is an effort to modernize their structure so they can continue for another 50 years. And with climate change, we really need to come to an end with this. I was also an individual scientist on the lawsuit that went to for the EIR against the state of California, Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we had it, we won on that a lawsuit. And the reason was performance criteria, because they weren't evaluated well. What the judge decided and saw was that the federal government had pulled out. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service submitted no information, so the EIS part of the project was canceled. Therefore, the performance criteria couldn't be evaluated for federally listed species and et cetera. The government, federal government, knew the least Bell's vireo was there. It's a neotropical species, and the burrowing owl was present too. These are not birds that just randomly fly and go to other. They have a purpose. When a bird flies, they're in fear. They're seeking food. They're doing reproduction. There's nothing like a poetic thing about freedom of flying. There's definite purpose going on. The least Bell's vireo has been going up. Can I have one more minute? I'm a scientist, Mr. President, to finish my comment on some important information
Sorry, you can submit your additional comments via email to the commission, and we'll take those on the record.
Okay. Could I have the last 10 seconds?
If you had 10 seconds left, go ahead. All right, looks like we're going to move on, but we appreciate your comments, and please feel free to
I'm here for the last few seconds or 10, 15 seconds, please.
Okay, you know what, sir? We're going to go ahead and do your 10 seconds right now, but we have to wrap it up, okay?
Okay, thank you. I would like to see Andrew Willis and Lisa Hagee do an enforcement action investigation right now while we're going on, because this is it's piecemealing and going on in project splitting and impact, and it's nesting season starting right now.
Thank you so much, sir.
No more further comments.
Okay. I'd like to bring it back to staff to respond to anything that was brought up during the comment period.
Thank you, Chair. We definitely appreciate the public comments and believe all the issues raised today, including those regarding piecemealing, are adequately addressed in the staff report and posted addendum. Our analysis found that permanent removal of these wells from the ecological reserve is consistent with the relevant Coastal Act policies.
All right. With that, I'll bring it back to the commission to see if there's any questions, comments. Seeing none, I'd like to see if there's a commissioner who'd like to move this item.
I'm happy. I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I think this is the right one. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 9-23-0818 pursuant to the staff recommendation. I recommend the yes vote.
Okay, so we have a motion by Commissioner Wilson, seconded by Commissioner Harmon. The maker of the motion is asking for a yes vote. I'd like to see if there's any commissioner who objects to unanimous approval. Seeing none, that passes unanimously. All right, thank you so much for your time on that item. With that, we're going to move on to North Central Coast District Deputy Director's Report. I'll turn it over to staff for a presentation on this item.
Yes, thank you, Chair Cummings. That is item 10, North Central Coast District Director's Report. We're reporting three waivers, one immaterial amendment and one LCP certification. We're not aware of any objections or controversy, and so we're looking for the commission's concurrence.
All right. Is there any ex partes on these items? Seeing none, are there any members of the public signed up to speak on this item?
We have one person attending available for questions, and then Tom, we're not seeing him on Zoom, Tom Gaman. We don't see him, so that's it.
Okay. So bring it back to the commission. Are there three or more commissioners who object to concurrence? Seeing none, commission concurs. That moves us on to our next item, Central Coast District Deputy Director's Report. I'll turn it back to Central Coast staff for a presentation on this item.
Thank you, Chair Cummings and Commissioners. That will take us to Agenda Item 12, the Central Coast DD's Report. Today we're reporting four waivers. We're not aware of any comments or controversy associated with such items, and so we're looking for your concurrence on the DD's.
Are there any ex partes? Seeing none, are there any members of the public signed up to speak on this item?
No.
Okay, bring it back to the commission. Do three or more commissioners object to concurrence with the staff recommendation? Seeing no objection, commission concurs.
All right, thank you.
That moves us on to our next item. Item number 13B, Santa Cruz County LCP Amendment LCP-3-SCO-24-0067-3 related to SB 9. And I'll turn it back to staff for the presentation on this item.
Yep, and I will turn it over to Nolan Clark, a coastal planner in the Central Coast office and lead planner on this item, to give the staff presentation.
Good morning, Chair Cummings and Commissioners. Item 13B is a proposed Santa Cruz County LCP amendment designed to implement the provisions of Senate Bill, or SB 9, in the coastal zone. SB 9 is one of many state laws passed in recent years aimed at increasing construction of additional housing units as a means of helping to address the state's housing, particularly affordable housing, crisis. Before getting started, I would note that we distributed an addendum yesterday that responds to comments received from a variety of parties and makes changes to the staff recommendation that were requested and or that staff believes are appropriate. Notably, these changes increase areas where SB 9 related development would be allowed and otherwise refine and clarify proposed LCP provisions. Next slide, please. The proposed amendment would allow either the subdivision of single-family residentially zoned parcels into two parcels and the construction of up to two residential units on each of the new lots, or up to four residential units on one lot with two primary units and two accessory dwelling units when no subdivision occurs, as shown in the diagram here on slide 2. In effect, the proposed amendment seeks to intensify the amount of allowed residential development within urbanized areas zoned for single-family residential use, which is not so different from the Coastal Act requirement to direct new development into existing developed areas with the infrastructure and facilities able to handle it. The vast majority of the new residential development fostered by the proposed amendment would best be considered infill development in areas where it is not expected to raise significant coastal resource issues, and the applicable LCP provisions there should be sufficient to address any latent issues that remain, for example, through required setbacks, heights, or lot coverages. Next slide, please. In the case of the county's proposal, however, there are two specific areas where densification of the sort envisioned by SB 9 could lead to significant adverse coastal resource impacts, namely in terms of development intensive habitats and in more hazardous shoreline areas. The county's proposal attempts to disallow SB 9 densification within these areas to a certain degree, but it appears to inadvertently limit such application. Fortunately, relatively minor modifications can clarify these provisions in a way that both fosters densification in the county's coastal zone while protecting significant coastal resources. In terms of sensitive habitat areas, the proposed amendment language is unclear where such restriction applied, and thus, in order to be consistent with the LUP, suggested modifications clarify that all sensitive habitat areas within the county's coastal zone are ineligible for SB 9 development. In terms of coastal hazards areas, the county's proposal requires that SB 9 development on bluff tops meet existing LCP site stability standards, but does not speak to areas located seaward of coastal bluffs where significant hazards exist, including the tidal inundation as seen at the bottom left here on slide 3, where new building sites are not allowed by the LUP. Thus, suggested modifications serve to preclude such hazardous areas from being further densified. Other suggested modifications serve to clarify the county's proposal relative to other LUP requirements, essentially in ways that augment the county's intent with the proposal. Next slide, please. All told, due to these suggested modifications necessary for LUP consistency, the area where this densification would not apply are extremely limited, shown in blue here on slide 4, and essentially only in the areas of coastal hazards seaward of coastal bluffs, relative to the areas where such provisions would still apply, which are shown in beige. Notably, the vast majority of the county's urban single-family residentially zoned areas are still eligible for SB 9 development and do not conflict with the broader SB 9 goals of increased residential densification, where such development can occur without impacts to significant coastal resources. Next slide, please. In conclusion, as modified, the proposed amendment offers another new LCP tool to help encourage additional housing in a way where it can be accommodated while also avoiding any potentially significant coastal resource impacts. And county staff has indicated that it is in agreement with the suggested modifications. Thus, we recommend the commission approve the amendment as modified. The required motions and resolutions to implement this recommendation are found on page 4 of the staff report. This concludes staff presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none, is the applicant available, or does the applicant wish to speak on this item?
We don't have any applicant on.
Okay, is there any? One sign up for public comment?
Yes, one person, Kevin Huber.
Okay.
Kevin Huber, if you can unmute yourself, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead and speak.
Okay. Chair Cummings, commissioners, I appreciate staff's acknowledgement that the Coastal Act and the County General Plan support new development on infill parcels that are existing lots of record. Coastal staff's modifications that exclude all RB zone land are legally suspect and are not supported by any county or Coastal Act policy that would justify excluding only RB zone land when there are other residentially zoned oceanfront lands in Santa Cruz County that share similar characteristics as existing RB zone lots. Coastal staff broadly cites county policies alleging prohibiting infill housing on existing lots in coastal hazard areas. And that is not the case. The LUP policies focus on mitigation, not elimination of housing on existing, not newly created, but existing infill coastal lots such as the one we own and have long paid taxes on. Staff also acknowledges that Santa Cruz County has robust LCP guidelines to allow ADUs on RB zone land. How is it that an SB 9 dwelling creates any more risk than an ADU on the exact same parcel? In their addendum, your staff refers to Government Code Section 65852.21 at A2, and this section then specifically refers to Government Code Section 65913.4. And it includes only subsections B through K of that section. What staff fails to point out is that the subsection A that was not included is the coastal zone, including hazardous areas. In other words, the legislature specifically meant to include the coastal zone, including beachfront lots, as eligible under SB 9. Staff indicates that county staff is in concurrence with the modifications. However, it is not county staff. It is the Board of Supervisors' concurrence that is required. And the Board of Supervisors has approved the amendment in the form sent to you, not with the modifications of staff. I urge this commission to adopt the LCP amendment as proposed. It is consistent with the Coastal Act county land use policies and will allow the county to move forward with an LCP that complies with SB 9 and SB 450. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have one more speaker. He just popped up. He's on here already.
Okay.
Mike Guth. if you can unmute yourself.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead and speak, please.
Okay, there it is. I have a presentation. Good morning. It's still morning, Chair Cummings and Commissioners. I would like to address just one small portion of this LCP amendment, and that has to do with environmental sensitive habitat aspects. And I'm speaking today on behalf of the Sierra Club as the co-chair of the Sierra Club's Coastal Subcommittee, and I'm also chair of the Santa Cruz County group of the Sierra Club. We identified a problem with the county's code and brought it to staff. There was an internal inconsistency, which was likely going to lead to big problems in implementation. Next slide, please. But I want to start by pointing out that SB 9 already explicitly excluded most ESHA from eligibility under SB 9 development. Just as you heard the prior speaker say that the coastal zone wasn't excluded, in subparagraphs B through K, A was excluded, that's coastal zone. B through K includes J, and that's habitat for protected species, as you can see there at the bottom of the slide. All those zones are precluded from SB 9 development by state law. Next slide, please. But what the county did in their code was that they carved out something from this ineligibility matrix. This is in conflict with SB 9. You actually have and this conflict's going to perk up a lot. So we pointed this out, and the first Coastal Commission staff recommendation was wonderful. They appropriately resolved this conflict. And we'd go to the next slide, please. We urge recommendation of the original staff recommendation, and if we have the revised version, I don't know. Do we have another slide on this version of the PowerPoint? Yes. So in red was the original version. It's wonderful. They've tried to do this carve out. The YIMBY letter is misleading. The state already excluded most ESHA, and the change that we have got rid of this carve out. Please use the original recommendation as seen in red for this one narrow aspect. Thank you.
Thank you. No more speakers.
Hey, bring back the staff for comments on this.
Yeah, just real briefly, with respect to the issues raised about prohibiting SB 9 development along the immediate shoreline, I think the rationale and the issues behind it to support the staff recommendation are well explained in the staff report and the addendum. The general sentiment being that the land use plan currently does not allow such intensification of development, and so the standard of review for this amendment is to implement such provisions. And then with respect to ESHA, we think the change in the addendum appropriately does not allow development within ESHA, and that was the county's intent, and we're continuing with that. So I think both issues are pretty well addressed in our opinion. We recommend approval, and we're available for questions.
Okay. Are there any commissioners have questions or comments on this item? Seeing none, I think I remember one of the issues, and just to speak to this publicly, when this came to the Board of Supervisors, I think that initially they were saying that properties that had ESHA would be excluded, and the board then took action to say that properties with sensitive habitat, that there would have to be buffers from that sensitive habitat, which would allow for more properties to be included, instead of having it be if there's ESHA on the property, you could not build SB 9 projects. So I was thinking about this more deeply, and so I voted against that on the board because I thought that we should try to protect properties that had sensitive habitat from having SB 9 units placed on them. That being said, I do agree with the staff's recommendation for what the Board of Supervisors ultimately ended up voting on and the consistency with that in the Coastal Act. And so I'm going to register a no vote just to be consistent, but I do think that you all I think the board and the commission should move forward with the actions today, and I totally agree with the staff recommendation and its consistency with the actions taken by the supervisors and its consistency with the Coastal Act. So with that, if there's any member of the commission who would like to make a motion on this item.
I'm happy to do so. And there's two motions for this one. I move that the commission reject the implementation plan amendment LCP-3-SCO-24-0067-3 as submitted by Santa Cruz County, and I recommend a yes vote.
Is there a second?
Second.
So a motion by second. Commissioner Sorry. Wilson, seconded by Commissioner Hart. The maker of motion is asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous approval? It's the next one. There's two motions. Okay, seeing none, the first motion passes unanimously. That moves us on to the second motion.
All right, I move that the commission certify LCP amendment number LCP-3-SCO-24-0067-3 as submitted by Santa Cruz County. And if it is modified as suggested in the staff report, I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Commissioner Wilson, seconded by Commissioner Hart. The makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. I'll turn it to Ms. Miller for a roll call vote on this item.
Commissioner Bochco? Bochco, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Loewenberg?
Yes.
Loewenberg, yes. Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Turnbull-Sanders?
Yes.
Turnbull-Sanders, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Chair Cummings?
No.
Cummings, no. The vote is 9 yes, 1 no.
All right, that brings us to our last item, and hopefully we can get through this pretty quickly. And this is item number 14A, permit amendment number 3-23-0014-A1 Grossman, Pismo Beach. I'll turn to staff for the presentation on this item.
Thank you, Chair Cummings, and we have a PowerPoint. So yes, item 14A is a CDP amendment application to make certain changes to the scope and special conditions previously approved by the commission for a shoreline armoring structure protecting a single family residence in the city of Pismo Beach. Before getting started, I'll note that we distributed an addendum that provides responses to correspondence received from the Surfrider Foundation. And while the addendum provides some additional context and explanation behind the proposed CDP amendment, nothing in the correspondence received or addendum alters staff's basic recommendation, which remains approval of the CDP amendment application today. Slide one here shows the project site just inland of the red arrows. Next slide. Slide two here shows the project site located in northern Pismo Beach in the Sunset Palisades area at the base of the bluff and on the bluff face at 121 Indio Drive. The site is noted here on the slide. Next slide. And slide three zooms in on the project site, which is along the bluff and shoreline, seaward of the second home, downcoast from Florence Street on Indio Drive. Next slide. As detailed in the Commission's adopted findings for the underlying CDP to which this amendment is proposed, the project site has been the subject of multiple past regular and emergency CDPs related to shoreline armoring, where the underlying permit in early 2023 authorized a full bluff, tied back, contoured, and camouflaged replacement armoring structure along approximately 100 feet of coast. That as-built structure is shown here in slide four. Following commission approval, the applicant sued the commission over its decision, and the party subsequently agreed to a settlement of that litigation in early 2025. Next slide. The settlement agreement is reflected in the proposed CDP amendment, which includes changes to both the project scope, including by eliminating certain previously approved armoring elements, and thus reducing the overall amount of permitted armoring, and through a series of changes to special conditions, including to the required mitigation. As detailed in the staff report and addendum, staff believes the changes are fully consistent with the fundamental principles and approaches the Commission embraced in its action in 2023, and that the amendment is more about employing updated data and finding an amenable resolution to the project's complex legal and technical issues. The amendment maintains the Commission's core analytic framework regarding shoreline armoring in terms of coastal resource impact assessments, 20-year mitigation term, tying the life of the armoring to the redevelopment of the house, and repair and maintenance allowances. The core change is with respect to the mitigation fee amount, where the fact that it is lower than before is based on changes in data and not on any sort of litigation pressure. Even though this is a reduction in the fee compared to the original, this is not a reduction in coastal resource protection. Rather, it is more a refinement of that assessment. As a result, staff does not believe that this change raises any significant Coastal Act concerns. Next slide. So in conclusion, we believe the proposed changes do not modify the Commission's original decision in ways that would lead to any significant additional coastal resource impacts or lessen or avoid the intended effect of the original permit. Staff further believes the proposed changes in many ways are simply refinements to that originally approved CDP, and we continue to recommend approval of the amendment. The motion can be found on page 4 of the staff report, and this concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, are there any members of the public signed up to speak on this item?
We have a representative of the applicant, Steve Kaufman.
Thank you, and it's still morning, so good morning. Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, Steve Kaufman for the applicant. If there's no opposition today, I'd ask for 1 minute. If there is opposition, then I'd reserve, with your permission, 4 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. We, of course, support the staff recommendation. This has been a very long and interactive process, and I want to make sure that I sincerely thank your staff. And Carl, Kevin Kahn, Trooper, Katie Butler, and the Attorney General's Office for all their hard work on this. The addendum and staff's presentation today, which we appreciate, I fully responded to the letter from Surfrider, and I hope it was clarified this for Surfrider. And my letter to you responded to it as well. And at this point, I would just respectfully ask for your approval and would reserve any remaining time for rebuttal. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Okay, is there anyone else signed up to speak on this item?
Yes, we have two speakers, Mandy Sackett followed by Brad Snook. Mandy Sackett.
Hello, good morning, Chair Cummings and Commissioners. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Surfrider Foundation, Mandy Sackett on behalf of the Surfrider Foundation, to urge you not to accept the revised mitigation fee or the removal of the high tide line monitoring in this seawall amendment. Today's amendment puts more than just this one seawall on the line. This is a test of the integrity of our permitting and mitigation tools. So for the reduced fee, which is down from $1.29 million to just over $548,000, it's based on a downgraded erosion rate of 1 foot per year, despite 2023 findings showing that the bluff retreat up to 2 feet, retreat is up to 2 feet annually and 27 feet of undercut at the base. So the staff report nor the addendum actually adequately justifies this shift or explains what this supposed new data is. So it leaves us really confused. And then second, so the property valuation of $319 per square foot really is shockingly low for these bluff top homes in Pismo. The addendum points out that they looked at more houses, but it doesn't actually say which homes. I can't wrap my head around where they got such a low number. When I looked at about a dozen recently sold homes, the average square foot was closer to $1,000 per square foot, and even up to $2,000 per square foot for bluff top homes. So I don't know if staff is looking at more inland homes or different types of real estate, but it just doesn't square to be valuing these homes at $320 per square foot based on anything that I can find on recent sales. So we really think that weakening this fee sets a bad precedent, and it invites future applicants to sort of cherry pick inputs into their lower sort of cost. If the real estate valuation methodology is going to be expensive, it needs to be defensible and not easily manipulated. And we also need these mitigation fees to actually offset the impacts. Thank you.
Thank you. And Brad Snook.
This is Brad Snook. I'm the vice chair of Surfrider SLO. I want to talk about the proposal to remove the mean high tide line monitoring requirement. The staff addendum justifies the removal by stating that the wall is landward of the mean high tide line, but that's only today. We all know that the shoreline isn't fixed. It's ambulatory. Erosion, storm damage, sea level rise, these horses don't stop because there's no stairway attached to the wall. This wall is already right up against the public beach, and sometimes the water reaches it. It's been damaged multiple times. The ocean will continue to move inland, and when it does, that wall will become very easily end up sitting on public trust land. If you eliminate the monitoring, you lose your ability to know when that happens. Monitoring is not just bureaucratic red tape. It's a safeguard for the public. It's how you ensure that coastal armoring doesn't quietly become coastal privatization. And the burden of tracking encroachment shouldn't fall on the Coastal Commission or the public. It should remain with the property owner, the one who benefits from the wall. Please don't weaken this special condition. Keeping the high tide line monitoring is the bare minimum if we want to protect the public's rights in the face of a rapidly changing shoreline. Thank you.
Thank you. No more speakers.
Thank you. I do have a couple points to make. First, staff addressed the in lieu fee. I'm disappointed that Surf Rider would complain here about the owner of one single-family house agreeing to pay $548,000, which will provide additional public access improvements in and around Pismo Beach. And I want to put this fee in perspective for you because it's missing here. In 2003, the commission approved a 15-foot high, 165-foot long vertical seawall across three properties. A portion of Mr. Grossman's property, his upcoast neighbor's property, and an upcoast street end, which we threw in. It also included a cutoff wall at the bottom, the very bottom of Mr. Grossman's property to protect against undercutting of the bluff. Surfrider's letter inaccurately described this project as a seawall. This isn't the seawall. The shoreline protection proposed here is the replacement of the damaged cutoff wall and a minor extension of it. Now, the 2003 approval required Mr. Grossman to dedicate the sandy beach, which he did, and along with his neighbor to pay a $10,000 in lieu fee as mitigation for that substantial seawall, and Mr. Grossman paid that portion of his fee. The 2023 action required a nearly $1.3 million in lieu fee with respect to a house that staff valued at $3 million. That was 259 times the fee the commission imposed on Mr. Grossman for the much larger seawall project and about 45% of the home's value today. Now, staff has explained that we reduced the scope of the project and the term of the permit. They further researched nearby real estate values, and we sincerely appreciate that staff updated and recalculated the fee per its formula. Still nearly 110 times the 2003 fee. But the bottom line is Mr. Grossman has agreed to pay it, and it will help provide good public access improvements for Pismo Beach. Regarding the formula used for determining an in-lieu fee, which staff uses also a real estate value. Now, for purposes of this hearing and the computation of the $548,000 fee, Mr. Grossman accepts staff's use of the $319 per square foot figure. But I might note that this property, for example, valued by staff at $3 million, has 10,000 square feet, which would make it $300 per square foot, and that's less than the 319 square foot figure that staff has used, and we've accepted that here. And as to the erosion rate, Surfrider incorrectly questioned the erosion rate used by staff. Our geotechnical expert previously determined on a detailed site-specific analysis that the average annualized erosion rate is 0.54 feet per year over the 20-year period. Your technical staff concluded it should be twice that. And lastly, as to the mean high tide line monitoring, now staff has explained the cutoff wall effectively defines the landward extent of the mean high tide line during the term of the amended permit. So 5-year monitoring in this case is not necessary. But the special conditions do require a monitoring report for the approved shoreline protection to be submitted to staff every 5 years, at the same time as the 5-year monitoring report that the commission required for the larger CLL project. Request that you approve it. Thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'd like to close the public hearing and bring it back to staff to see if there's any additional comments that need to be made.
Real quickly, just we agree with many of the points Mr. Kaufman made. The change to the mitigation fee amount is simply a reflection of different inputs, but those inputs are all scientifically sound, including with our staff geologist. And with respect to the mean high tide line, in this particular case, given the location of the armoring, we don't see it's not readily apparent the utility to keep it in this particular case. So all that's explained in pretty detail in the report and addendum, and we're available for questions.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'd like to bring it back to the commission for any questions, comments, and action. Okay, Commissioner Hart.
I move that the commission approve the proposed amendment to Coastal Development Permit 3-23-0014 pursuant to staff recommendation, and I recommend a yes vote.
So a motion by Commissioner Hart, seconded by Commissioner Bochco. The maker of the motion asking for a yes vote. Before we go to the vote, I just want to say I do share some of the concerns that Sir Frieder brought up, but want to recognize that this item has been in litigation for quite some time, and we were able to agree on a settlement. And so really what's before us today is to get this project moving forward. And so with that, I'll ask if there's any commissioner who objects to unanimous approval. Seeing none, that passes unanimously. Thank you all. That concludes our April Coastal Commission meeting. Next month, we will be in Half Moon Bay. And I just want to thank the staff. I want to thank all of our AV crew. Billy, you're going to be deeply missed. So thank you for your last meeting with us. And that concludes our meeting. Thank you very much.
Hey, Billy.
Billy has left the building. We love you, Billy.